On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minutes past 6 p.m. here on the East Coast, Eastern Daylight Time Zone. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. Streaming to you live from the hills and hollers, as John Fox noted, of almost level West by God, Virginia. Hanging on by a thread. Last night was deeply frustrating with all the streaming issues, but we did get a podcast out, even though we didn't get started on time. The Horn is always available on a wide variety of platforms, including the website itself, headonradionetwork.com, and its Listen Live link. Also available on smartphone, Android, iPhone-type platforms with applications like TuneIn Radio and Stitcher Internet Radio and the Tuner Internet Radio app. You can also get the podcast by picking up the feed over at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for this program. And you can also get it at iTunes. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Just a note, you may recall that a couple of days ago our streaming computer went boogity-boogity and died. I put the backup computer in place to get the stream out. And obviously, as you can tell, we're getting a live stream out. However, for some reason or another, we cannot get the rerun stream to go. And this is not for want of competence or understanding or no. It's just for lack of cooperation on the part of the hardware and some software. So that's my Sunday project, to get that working. But with all the problems we had yesterday, and the problems the day before with the rotten the computer going south, this. Caesar! Who calls? Did everyone, every noise be still, peace yet again. In the press that calls on me, I hear a tongue, shriller than all the music, cry, Caesar, speak. Caesar is turned to hear. Beware the Ides of March. What man is that? The soothsayer bids you beware the Ides of March. Set him before me, let me see his face. Fellow, come from the throng, look upon Caesar. What sayest thou to me now? Speak once again. Beware the Ides of March. And here it is. 15th day of March, 2013, 2057 years. Have I got it right? Math on the fly, you know, not my strong suit. 2057 years since the world was rocked with an assassination that actually may have changed the entire course of Western history. Asian history, too, for that matter. Because the assassins, you may recall, had to strike when they struck during the Feast of Lupercalia, because Caesar was getting ready to head east to try to do to the Parthians what he had done to the Gauls. There's no certainty, however, he would have been successful against the Parthians, but seeing as how the Parthian king had taken his old business partner, Marcus Licinius Crassus, tied him up, sat him up, jacked his mouth open and poured molten gold down his throat to satisfy his lust for same, Caesar felt like he really did have to do something, and there were some the legionary eagles lost in the process, too, and that was intolerable. Caesar felt like he really did have to do something. But certainly, that assassination turned the tides of history because it set forth a civil war that that eventually gave birth to the Roman Empire and everything that fell into line after that, including the empire's own fall. I've always been particularly, well, this little passage about beware the Ides of March. You know, Bill Shakespeare, when you've known somebody as long as I've known Bill, we call him Bill. Bill Shakespeare didn't just throw words around. There's a definite difference between the word hear and the word listen. Casca says, bid every noise be still, peace yet again. And Caesar says, who is it in the press that calls on me? I hear a tongue shriller than all the music cries, Caesar, speak. Caesar is turned to hear. He uses that word twice, hear. My own particular suspicion is that that word hear is used deliberately because Caesar hears the warning. He does not listen to it. Caesar hears the warning. He does not heed the warning. Beware the Ides of March. What man is that? A soothsayer bids you beware the Ides of March, says Brutus, who has murder in his heart. What sayest thou to me now? Speak once again. Beware the Ides of March. And Caesar says he is a dreamer. Let us leave him. Pass. He is a dreamer. Let us leave him. Pass. For Caesar had heard, but Caesar did not listen. Worth considering. So here it is, Friday on the front porch. A little note in the way of fundraising. Got a note in from Robert in Australia. And being is, well, we're a little early for his 20th of the month challenge. But Robert heard what I was saying about us being behind and immediately stepped up to the into the breach, as it were. He wrote earlier today, or maybe it was yesterday at the time. Just have to scroll down here to it. We'll have it in a sec. He says, I'm a day or two behind listening to the podcast. 500 behind schedule? Well, yeah. All right, says, please put a $150 challenge from me on the table as soon as you be fit. And then, just by way of a little lagniappe to go with the email, Robert says, and look at the vague crap we're being fed about the new pope here in Oz. And I'll have the graphic up momentarily. Because for some reason it didn't show up in this email. Yeah, here it comes. And while Robert refers to it as vague crap, them things you may not know about Pope Francis. But oddly enough, underneath the picture of the same, dark points surround new Pope Francis. Bergoglio had an active and controversial role during Jorge Rafael Videla's military dictatorship in 1976. That's more than the for-profit media are willing to report here, to the extent that they haven't just moved on and parachuted to a new crisis or a new something or another. Yeah, maybe CPAC. Well, never has heard a discouraging word. Robert also adds, P.S., I've downloaded the Ayn Rand videos you mentioned this week. Just can't force myself to watch them at the moment. Yeah, you don't want to do that on a full stomach, Robert. It is nothing you're going to like. It's creepy, as a matter of fact. But thank you very much for putting that $150 challenge on the table. It is much appreciated. Very much appreciated. The PayPal button, of course, is at headonradionetwork.com. So, too, is the snail mail address. That is deeply, any way you choose to help us keep the lights on here is deeply appreciated. Now, by way of getting this Friday on the Front Porch started, Friday on the Front Porch is all about cussing and discussing the world, the week that has gone before. And of course, you know the freak show has opened in. Well, Jim was right. It's across the river from D.C. Apparently, they can't. Oh dear. Yeah. Michael writing in. What I said a minute ago. Never has heard a discouraging word about the Pope on the for-profit media. Michael finished the rhyme for me. Where never has heard a discouraging word, and the Pope is not fascist all day. Bingo! First toaster of the night. Michael's got quite a collection at this point. But anyway, Jim was right. It's being held over on the Maryland side of D.C. or something, this CPAC clavern. And when I say clavern, I mean clavern. Over there to National Harbor, Maryland, they had a panel on minority outreach. At something like CPAC, the idea of minority outreach is not going to be a good idea, and you just know it, and so do I. Lucky for us, we've got the audio. Now, this the goober you are about to hear was wandering around with a Rick Santorum sticker on, so, well, you probably get a pretty good idea of how he feels about the blah people. All right. Let's go to the tape, as they used to say. A panel discussion on GOP conservative minority outreach.
It seems to me like you're reaching out to voters and that through the program that you're offering us at the expense of young white southern males like myself, my demographic. I study literature, English literature and stuff, and as I read about the past...
I studied literature, English literature and stuff. Damn. I thought dear old Harvard on the Mon up in Morgantown was the only one that offered a degree in English literature and stuff. Because I got one. Says it right there. Bachelor of Arts in English Literature and Stuff. Back in 1985 when they handed me mine, my stuff included keg parties on Friday nights, something we called the Sunnyside Slide, upper-level co-ed chasing. It was an unenlightened time. I wasn't married. Yeah, you get the idea. It was college. there were some extracurricular activities, part of that and stuff, but it couldn't be included as part of the degree program as it was not legal, nor was it medical. And occasionally the walls would breathe. English literature and stuff. Oh, help me, Jesus. But I wonder if you're doing this outreach at the expense of my demographic, young white southern males. Right, because he's a member of an underserved minority, young white southern males. But do let Bocephus J. Boogermunch continue. Let's go back.
Seems to me like you're reaching out to voters in that big program and you're offering this at the expense of young white southern males like myself, my demographic. I study literature, English literature and stuff, and as I read about the past, I really came to love my people and my culture. And that, I know that's anathema. I mean,
careful how you throw around that my people there, Bocephus J. Boogermunch. I may be paler than you, but I don't think we're going to be showing up at any coffee clutches together. My culture, my people. Your people could not have had your culture without building it on the backs of a lot of brown people that you enslaved and or killed. But as we noted on the program last night, this country, and this guy proves it, I'm beginning to feel like I need to wear the stupid purple velvet robe with the frayed moons and stars appliqué on it and carry around my busted eight ball that with the answer hazy ask again later always appearing in the bottom. Damn! Last night on this here very program, we were talking about the fact that the United States of America and most of the people in it have never, ever had an earnest, honest discussion or made any attempt whatsoever to really, really, really deal with what slavery did to the United States and what it obviously continues to do to the United States to this day. And we ain't even got to the so-called good part yet. I'm sorry, I bust into my inner redneck when I get going on this stuff. It's kind of like speaking in tongues. And we haven't gotten to the good part yet. The good portion, I should say. There, I'm speaking better now. Couple of swigs of the stump liquor, and man, you're right back down to... What a bunch of goblollies. Sitting around picking their teeth with their shorn-off toenails. Jesus Christ! My people! My culture! And he, like Mark Twain's lightning rod salesman of a couple of nights ago, hauls around some pretty impressive words like anathema. Must have learned that listening to Hannity, or maybe Oh Really. Cheap.
People in my culture. Okay, and that, I know that's anathema. I mean, I know that's bad to say.
So nobody said that.
Yeah, so my question would be, I feel like my people, my demographic, are being systematically disenfranchised. Yeah. And furthermore...
Yeah, he's being disenfranchised. White, male, southern. When did somebody ask him to sign his name on a piece of wax paper with a ballpoint pen at the polling place to prove that he was literate? When did somebody tell him he couldn't sit at a lunch counter? When did somebody deny him the rental or purchase of housing based upon his pasty, doughy, white skin? Nobody. Never. But he feels like he's being disenfranchised because his precious, conservative, right-wing feelings of about his whiteness are in trouble. And he feels this way because he's got Glenn Beck out there, and he's got Hannity out there, and he's got Limbaugh out there, and he's got telling him that he is under siege. And the zombie apocalypse is upon us, and the zombie, dark skin. Apparently, he showed up at the meeting with a buddy, and they done come there, and his buddy was wearing his Confederate flag T-shirt, because he's going to say it loud and say it proud. I'm white. Again, with the robe and the stars, you remember the other night when I mentioned that I found it highly ironic that there are probably no living relatives, no living progeny of Abraham Lincoln, and yet the progeny of Jefferson Davis walks the earth. Guess what? This my people, jackass, my culture, jackass, claims to be a descendant, a direct linear descendant of Jefferson Davis. Shoulda hung him! Not this guy, Davis. Lincoln was wrong. He said, you know, it wouldn't bother me at all if he was to slip through the lines and escape. So here he is getting all systematically disenfranchised. I don't think... I don't think he understands the words either systematic or disenfranchised. Oh, the funny guys in the chat room. Oh, you mean Aunt Anathema? Aunt Anathema? Never met the lady. Oh, she's a hoot, especially with a few thimbles of absinthe in her. Time out. Gotta respond real quick. Okay. Back to Bocephus J. Booger Munch. Crispy. Let's see what he means when he says he's being systematically disenfranchised. I can't wait for this.
You know, people like the lady over in the red shirt applauded and said, "Yay, that's good." My problem is, why can't we be more like Booker T. Washington Republicans and his famous statement, "Let's be unified"?
Somebody out there somewhere is a screaming right now. Why can't we be more like Booker T. Washington Republicans? And again, this is just a gift that keeps on giving. Because we haven't gotten to the good part yet. Booker T. Washington was born in what is now West Virginia at a little place not far down the road called Malden. He was born into slavery. In the later discussions about what freedom meant in a post-Civil War America, what the end of slavery meant, there was a long and often vitriolic debate between people like Booker T. Washington and, if my history serves me correctly, W.E.B. Du Bois. And Booker T. Washington seemed to be, again, if I recall correctly, on the separate but equal side of the fence. He wanted, and correct me if I'm wrong, he wanted to just set up a separate black subculture within the culture. while others argued for complete integration. But Bocephus T. Boogermunch here has done learned him some history back when he was studying that English literature and stuff. He doesn't say where. I have yet to see a matchbook that says get a degree in English literature and stuff by drawing the parrot or Spunky the pirate. No, Spunky the turtle. Looks a lot like Mitch McConnell. But let's see where he's going with this. He wants some Booker T. Washington Republicans. Maybe he'll be so kind as to define that for us.
My problem is, why can't we be more like Booker T. Washington Republicans? And it's been a statement that let's be unified like a hand, let's suffer like a finger.
Okay. The question is, why can't we be more unified by Booker T. Washington Republicans versus Frederick Douglass? They call Booker T. Washington the second Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass was the originator. Okay? So when you said Douglass was not...
How about the unity and diversity?
What about it? Douglas talked about that. Here's an example. When Douglas escaped from slavery, I think 10 years or 20 years after he escaped from slavery, he writes a letter to his former slave master and says, I forgive you for all the things you did to me.
Forgiven him from shelter, food, all those
things? No.
And there's the good part. Frederick Douglass writes a letter to his former master forgiving him for enslaving him. To which Bocephus T. Boogermunch responds, forgive him for what? For housing him? For feeding him? Because, you know, that's what slavery was, according to the revisionist history that people like Bocephus T. Boogermunch of North Carolina, direct descendant of Jefferson Davis, believe. Slavery was this thing where a whole bunch of shiftless, no-account, lazy black folks just sort of laid about until they felt like going out one day and maybe picking some tobacco or maybe chopping a little cotton, doing a little something around the place. And all that time, that poor put-upon master, he had no choice. He had to feed and house them shiftless, no account, no good, lazy, lay about slaves. I mean, he never had no overseers sitting astride a horse with a shotgun in one hand and a whip in the other. Oh, hell no. No, there's flowers delivered and little chocolates put on the pillows in the slave quarters every night. And them slave quarters was ever bit as good as the bed that old Marsh was laying his head on, his little old pumpkin haid up there in the big house. Said it last night. I get it proved true today. If I get much better at this, I'm going to live at the racetrack. Then again, it doesn't take nearly as much talent to prognosticate right wingers being what right wingers are, as it does to pick the sea biscuit in the second at Santa Anita or Hollywood Park, because this is just human nature. Horses have a bit of sport to them. But you can predict what these dumbass bastards are doing without even really trying. Artist writes in, says, I found an old book with work by Dickens about visiting the States during the 19th century. He said it felt very depressing seeing slaves work. He came twice. The second time, we did not have slavery. Well, Dickens, for all the Dickens we give him for writing as though he were being paid by the word, which he probably was, Dickens was the voice of social conscience in Great Britain for his time. the miserable lives that you see depicted in things like Nicholas Nickleby and Bleak House and David Copperfield and even A Christmas Carol are reflections of the reality that he actually saw on a day-to-day basis. England at the dawn of the Industrial Revolution was a brutal place that was absolutely ruled by the idea of the free market. And the conditions were appalling. And if he was appalled at what he saw on a day-to-day business about out and about the streets of London, then he must surely have been miserable at what he saw in the American South under slavery. Jack down in Shreveport said, "When I looked up anathema in the dictionary just to see if there might be any nuance to it, I saw the following. One, something or someone that one vehemently dislikes. Racial hatred was anathema to her." Jack says, "Note the racial hatred part in the example. I just thought that was amusing, given the subject of the conversation." It's not amusing. It's a little coded message from the goddess of irony, Jack. Gotta be open to this stuff. So if that's not an appropriate opening to this Friday on the front porch, I don't know what is. But what I did get curious. And just thought I would see if we could. No. Well, if somebody can find the letter from Frederick Douglass to his master, ship it along. I think we ought to examine the text, seeing as how the conservatives here, 150 years after that little dust-up, have decided to finally engage in the slavery debate. Well, they're a little slow to the party, but they always bring good liquor. Oh, is this it? Yeah. Published, 1855. Forgive him? For what? Housing him? And feeding him? Sir, the long and intimate, though by no means friendly, relation which unhappily subsisted between you and myself leads me to hope that you will easily account for the great liberty which I now take in addressing you in this open and public manner. The same fact may remove any disagreeable surprise which you may experience on again finding your name coupled with mine in any other way than in an advertisement accurately describing my person and offering a large sum for my arrest. In thus dragging you again before the public, I am aware that I shall subject myself to no inconsiderable amount of censure. I shall probably be charged with an unwarrantable, if not a wanton, and reckless disregard of the rights and properties of private life. There are those North as well as South who entertain a much higher respect for rights which are merely conventional than they do for rights which are personal and essential. Write that one down. Save that one to put at the bottom of your emails. There are those North as well as South, who entertain a much higher respect for rights which are merely conventional than they do for rights which are personal and essential. Wow, that one still scans in 2013. Not a few there are in our country who, while they have no scruples against robbing the laborer of the hard-earned results of his patient industry, will be shocked by the extremely indelicate manner of bringing your name before the public. By the way, this old piece of human waste's name was Thomas Auld, A-U-L-D, to my old master, Thomas Auld. let us remember what a hideous human being Thomas Auld was. Believing this to be the case and wishing to meet every reasonable or plausible objection to my conduct, I will frankly state the ground upon which I justify myself in this instance, as well as on former occasions when I have thought proper to mention your name in public. All will agree that a man guilty of theft, robbery, or murder has forfeited the right to concealment and private life, that the community have a right to subject such persons to the most complete exposure. However much they may desire retirement and aim to conceal themselves and their movements from the popular gaze, the public have a right to ferret them out and bring their conduct before the proper tribunals of the country for investigation. Sir, you will undoubtedly make the proper application of these generally admitted principles and will easily see the light in which you are regarded by me. I will not therefore manifest ill temper by calling you hard names. I know you to be a man of some intelligence and can readily determine the precise estimate which I entertain of your character. I may therefore indulge in language which may seem to others indirect and ambiguous and yet be quite well understood by yourself. I have selected this day on which to address you because it is the anniversary of my emancipation, and knowing no better way, I am led to this as the best mode of celebrating that truly important event. Just 10 years ago, this beautiful September morning, yon bright sun beheld me a slave, a poor, degraded chattel, trembling at the sound of your voice, lamenting that I was a man and wishing myself a brute. The hopes which I had treasured up for weeks of a safe and successful escape from your grasp were powerfully confronted at this last hour by dark clouds of doubt and fear, making my person shake and my bosom to heave with the heavy contest between hope and fear. I have no words to describe to you the deep agony of soul which I experienced on that never-to-be-forgotten morning, for I left by daylight. I was making a leap in the dark. The probabilities, so far as I could by reason determine them, were stoutly against the undertaking. The preliminaries and precautions I had adopted previously all worked badly. I was like one going to war without weapons, 10 chances of defeat to 1 of victory. One in whom I had confided and one who had promised me assistance, appalled by fear at the trial hour, deserted me, thus leaving the responsibility of success or failure solely with myself. You, sir, can never know my feelings. As I look back to them, I can scarcely realize that I have passed through a scene so trying. Trying, however, as they were, and gloomy as was the prospect, thanks be to the Most High, who is ever the God of the oppressed, at the moment which was to determine my whole earthly career, His grace was sufficient. My mind was made up. I embraced the golden opportunity, took the morning tide at the flood, and a free man, young, active and strong is the result. I have often thought I should like to explain to you the grounds upon which I have justified myself in running away from you. I'm almost ashamed to do so now, for by this time you may have discovered them yourself. I will, however, glance at them. When yet but a child about 6 years old, I imbibed the determination to run away. The very first mental effort that I now remember on my part was an attempt to solve the mystery. Why am I a slave? And with this mental effort that I now remember on my part, this question, my youthful mind was troubled for many days, pressing upon me more heavily at times than others. When I saw the slave driver whip a slave woman, cut the blood out of her neck, and heard her piteous cries, I went away into the corner of the fence, wept, and pondered over the mystery. I had, through some medium, I know not what, got some idea of God, the creator of all mankind, the black and the white, and that he made the blacks to serve the whites as slaves. How could he do this and be good? I could not tell. I was not satisfied with this theory, which made God responsible for slavery, for it pained me greatly, and I have wept over it long and often. At one time, your first wife, Mrs. Lucretia, heard me sighing and saw me shedding tears and asked me the matter, but I was afraid to tell her. I was puzzled with this question till one night while sitting in the kitchen, I heard some of the old slaves talking of their parents having been stolen from Africa by white men and were sold here as slaves. The whole mystery was solved at once. Very soon after this, my Aunt Jenny and Uncle Noah ran away, and the great noise made about it by your father-in-law made me, for the first time, acquainted with the fact that these were free states as well as that there were free states as well as slave states. From that time I resolved that I would someday run away. The morality of the act I dispose of as follows. I am myself and you are yourself. We are two distinct persons, equal persons. What you are, I am. You are a man, and so am I. God created both and made us both separate beings, and I am not by nature bond to you, nor you to me. Nature does not make your existence depend upon me or mine to depend upon yours. I cannot walk upon your legs or you upon mine. I cannot breathe for you or you for me. I must breathe for myself and you for yourself. We are distinct persons and are each equally provided with faculties necessary to our individual existence. In leaving you, I took nothing but what belonged to me and in no way lessened your means for obtaining an honest living. Your faculties remained yours, and mine became useful to their rightful owner. I therefore see no wrong in any part of the transaction. It is true, I went off secretly. But that was more your fault than mine. Had I let you into the secret, you would have defeated the enterprise entirely. But for this, I should have been really glad to have made you acquainted with my intentions to leave. You may perhaps want to know how I like my present condition. I am free to say I greatly prefer it to that which I occupied in Maryland. I am, however, by no means prejudiced against the state as such. Its geography, climate, fertility, and products are such as to make it a very desirable abode for any man. But for the existence of slavery there, it is not impossible that I might again take up my abode in that state. It is not that I love Maryland less, but freedom more. You will be surprised to learn that people at the North labor under the strange delusion that if the slaves were emancipated at the South, they would flock to the North. So far from this being the case, in that event, you would see many old and familiar faces back again at the South. Fact is, there are few here who would not return to the South in the event of emancipation. We want to live in the land of our birth and to lay our bones by the side of our fathers. And nothing short of an intense love of personal freedom keeps us from the South. For the sake of this, most of us would live on a crust of bread and a cup of cold water. Since I left, you have had a rich experience. I have occupied stations which I never dreamed of when a slave. 3 out of the 10 years since I left you, I spent as a common laborer on the wharves of New Bedford, Massachusetts. It was there I earned my first free dollar. It was mine. I could spend it as I pleased. I could buy hams or herring with it without asking any odds of anybody. That was a precious dollar to me. You remember when I used to make $7 or $8 or even $9 a week in Baltimore, you would take every cent of it from me every Saturday night, saying that I belonged to you and my earnings also. I never liked this conduct on your part. To say the best, I thought it a little mean. I would not have served you so. But let that pass. I was a little awkward about counting money in New England fashion when I first landed in New Bedford. I came near betraying myself several times. I caught myself saying, "Fip," for fourpence. And at one time a man actually charged me with being a runaway, whereupon I was silly enough to become one by running away from him. For I was greatly afraid he might adopt measures to get me again into slavery, a condition I then dreaded more than death. I soon learned, however, to count money as well as to make it, and got on swimmingly. I married soon after leaving you. In fact, I was engaged to be married before I left you, and instead of finding my companion a burden, she was truly a helpmate. She went to live at service and I to work on the wharf, and though we toiled hard the first winter, we never lived more happily. After remaining in New Bedford for 3 years, I met with William Lloyd Garrison, a person of whom you have possibly heard. as he is pretty generally known among slaveholders. He put it into my head that I might make myself serviceable to the cause of the slave by devoting a portion of my time to telling my own sorrows and those of other slaves which had come under my observation. This was the commencement of a higher state of existence than any to which I had ever aspired. I was thrown into society the most pure, enlightened, and benevolent that the country affords. Among these, I have never forgotten you, but have invariably made you the topic of conversation, thus giving you all the notoriety I could do. I need not tell you that the opinion formed of you in these circles is far from being favorable. They have little respect for your honesty, and less for your religion. But I was going on to relate to you something of my interesting experience. I had not long enjoyed the excellent society to which I have referred before the light of its excellence exerted a beneficial influence on my mind and heart. Much of my early dislike of white persons was removed, and their manners, habits, and customs so entirely unlike what I had been used to in the kitchen quarters on the plantations of the South fairly charmed me, and gave me a strong disrelish for the coarse and degrading customs of my former condition. I therefore made an effort to improve my mind and deportment, as to be somewhat fitted to the station to which I seemed almost providentially called. The transition from degradation to respectability was indeed great, and to get from one to the other without carrying some marks of one's former condition is truly a difficult matter. I would not have you think that I am now entirely clear of all plantation peculiarities, but my friends here, while they entertain the strongest dislike to them, regard me with that charity to which my past life somewhat entitles me, so that my condition in this respect is exceedingly pleasant. So far as my domestic affairs are concerned, I can boast of as comfortable a dwelling as your own. I have an industrious and neat companion, and four dear children, the oldest a girl of 9 years, and three fine boys, the oldest eight, the next six, and the youngest 4 years old. The three oldest are now going regularly to school. Two can read and write, and the other can spell, with tolerable correctness, words of two syllables. Dear fellows, they're all comfortable beds, and are sound asleep, perfectly secure under my own roof. There are no slaveholders here to rend my heart by snatching them from my arms, or blast a mother's dearest hopes by tearing them from her bosom. These, dear children, are ours, not to work up into rice, sugar, and tobacco, but to watch over, regard, and protect, and to rear them up in the nurture and admonition of the gospel, to train them up in the paths of wisdom and virtue, and as far as we can to make them useful to the world and to themselves. Oh, sir, a slaveholder never appears to me so completely an agent of hell as when I think of and look upon my dear children. It is then that my feelings rise above my control. I meant to have said more with respect to my own prosperity and happiness, but thoughts and feelings which this recital has quickened unfit me to proceed further in that direction. The grim horrors of slavery rise in all their ghastly terror before me. The wails of millions pierce my heart and chill my blood. I remember the chain, the gag, the bloody whip, the death-like gloom overshadowing the broken spirit of the fettered bondman, the appalling liability of his being torn away from wife and children and sold like a beast at the market. Say not that this is a picture of fancy. You well know that I wear stripes on my back, inflicted by your direction, and that you, while we were brothers in the same church, caused this right hand with which I am now penning this letter to be closely tied to my left, and my person dragged at the pistol's mouth 15 miles from the Bayside to Easton to be sold like a beast in the market for the alleged crime of intending to escape from your possession. All this and more you remember and know to be perfectly true, not only of yourself, but of nearly all of the slaveholders around you. At this moment you are probably the guilty holder of at least three of my own dear sisters, and my only brother, in bondage. These you regard as your property. They are recorded on your ledger, or perhaps have been sold to human fleshmongers, with a view to filling your own ever-hungry purse. Sir, I desire to know how and where these dear sisters are. Have you sold them? Are they still in your possession? What has become of them? Are they living or dead? And my dear old grandmother, whom you turned out like an old horse to die in the woods, is she still alive? Write and let me know all about them. If my grandmother be still alive, she is of no service to you, for by this time she must be nearly 80 years old, too old to be cared for by one to whom she has ceased to be of service. Send her to me at Rochester, or bring her to Philadelphia, and it shall be the crowning happiness of my life to take care of her in her old age. Oh, she was to me a mother and a father, so far as hard toil for my comfort could make her such. Send me my grandmother, that I may watch over and take care of her in her old age, and my sisters, let me know all about them. I would write to them and learn all I want to know of them without disturbing you in any way, but that through your unrighteous conduct they have been entirely deprived of the power to read and write. You have kept them in utter ignorance, and have therefore robbed them of the sweet enjoyments of writing or receiving letters from absent friends and relatives. Your wickedness and cruelty committed in this respect on your fellow creatures are greater than all the stripes you have laid upon my back or theirs. It is an outrage upon the soul, a war upon the immortal spirit, and one for which you must give account at the last hour of our common Father and Creator. The responsibility which you have assumed in this regard is truly awful, and how you could stagger under it these many years is marvelous. Your mind must have become darkened, your heart hardened, your conscience seared and petrified, or you would have long since thrown off the accursed load and sought relief at the hands of a sin-forgiving God. How, let me ask, would you look upon me were I, some dark night, in company with a band of hardened villains, to enter the precincts of your elegant dwelling and seize the person of your own lovely daughter Amanda and carry her off from your family, friends, and all the loved ones of her youth, make her my slave, compel her to work, and take her wages, place her name on my ledger as property, disregard her personal rights, fetter the power of her immortal soul by denying her the right and privilege of learning to read and write, feed her coarsely, clothe her scantily, and whip her on the naked back occasionally, more and still more horrible, leave her unprotected, a degraded victim to the brutal lust of fiendish overseers who would pollute, blight, and blast her fair soul, rob her of all dignity, destroy her virtue, and annihilate in her person all the graces that adorn the character of virtuous womanhood. I ask, how would you regard me if such were my conduct? Oh, the vocabulary of the damned would not afford a word sufficiently infernal to express your idea of my God-provoking wickedness. Yet, sir, your treatment of my beloved sisters is in all essential points precisely like the case I have now supposed. Damning as would be such a deed on my part, it would be no more than that which you have committed against me and my sisters. I will now bring this letter to a close. You shall hear from me again, unless you let me hear from you. I intend to make use of you as a weapon with which to assail the system of slavery, as a means of concentrating public attention on the system and deepening the horror of the trafficking in the souls and bodies of men. I shall make use of you as a means of exposing the character of the American church and clergy, and as a means of bringing to this guilty nation, with you yourself, to repentance. In doing this, I entertain no malice towards you personally. There is no roof under which you would be more safe than mine, and there is nothing in my house which you might need for your comfort which I would not readily grant. Indeed, I should esteem it a privilege to set you an example as to how mankind ought to treat each other. I am your fellow man, but not your slave. Write lengthy document, but every word of it, I think, worth it. That's profound. And yet, Bocephus J. Boogermunch. Well, let's go back.
Here's an example. When Doug escaped from slavery, I think 10 years or 20 years after he escaped from slavery, he writes a letter to his former slave master and says, I forgive you for all the things you did to me.
Forgive him, shelter, food, all those
things.
I know it's video and it's cheating to talk about it on the radio, but even the little wing nuts are sitting there slack-jawed with their mouths hanging open catching flies when he says, for what? For feeding him and housing him? This, says the great-great-great-great-grandson of Jefferson Davis. Just 30 seconds more. Let's finish it. And thanks to the folks at Think Progress for going out and getting that. Apparently they went on and interviewed Bocephus J. Boogermunch. Think Progress asked Bocephus J. Boogermunch, as they write in their report, if he'd accept a society where African Americans were permanently subservient to whites, and he said, I'd be fine with that. Then he went on to say that African Americans, and this is a quote, should be allowed to vote in Africa. All the Tea Parties are concerned with the same racial problems he is. And then somebody along in this process challenged him on the roots of the Republican Party, you know, abolitionism. And he said, I didn't know the legacy of the Republican Party included women correcting men in public. Well, I guess we know what kind of church this guy goes to. Yeah. For feeding them. For housing them. Michael asking, who's laughing at who? Some of them are laughing at Bocephus J. Boogermunch, but when he first gets started talking about worrying about the systematic disenfranchisement of my people and my culture, there's people yesing and clapping and amening that too. Scott Terry is this clown's name. Bocephus J. Boogermunch. Scott Terry. Who proves my point. That this country has never even so much as attempted a reconciliation. As quickly as it possibly could have been, Reconstruction was deconstructed at the connivance of the members of the House and the Senate who had been returned to their places in the Congress. Note coming in from Philip. He says, what I love most about the Horn is that you and the callers and participants in writing not only ponder and comment on the issues of the present, but the forum is so free that musing about and reviewing the actions of the Roman leaders and other ancients is also fair game. You think that Rush and his audience discussed whether history dealt Hannibal a fair hand? As for me, I've always wondered about the ethnic cleansing of the Netherlands. I defer to Dr. John to inform us about the attitudes and prejudices of the Cro-Magnons, but how we, their descendants, have glossed over the fate of our fellow humans during an era when real diversity existed appalls me. As for me, I have Irish Alzheimer's. I'm not familiar with all the details because the memory fails me more now as I am closer to 60 than 50. But damn it, Bob, the Celts once dominated continental Europe and nary a soul discusses our right of return or why or how we were forced to the margins of Europe and the islands off its eastern coast. Western, I think. Philip. Yeah, they named a basketball team after us in Boston, but not everyone on the team is Irish. In fact, most aren't, so we only vicariously enjoy the championships and can't enjoy them even as an achievement for our ethnicity. Let's face it, Bob, the Irish, Scottish, and Welsh and the continental kinfolk haven't dazzled one in the Olympics since the committee dropped hurling because they assumed it was a sport in which a bunch of over-intoxicated Celts competed to see how far they could spew. Never let it be said that we in the Horn are committed progressives for this era only. Here it is, St. Patrick's Day approaching, and I know my ancestors would have prospered better if we hadn't been forced off our native lands millennia ago. The Great Famine would have had no impact if my ancestors had been eating caviar as part of the landed gentry in Spain or France, the ancestral lands, rather than potato soup in the thatched hovel. As for the frothy one, Santorum, nothing new there. The conservatives have been victims for a long time. Then again, the Nazis were recovering from the predations and iniquities of the Jews. If Santorum were English, he'd be bemoaning the loss of his potential civil service post in India or Burma because the colonials got uppity and ungrateful. Come on, Rick. You're a conservative. Stop looking to the government and society for redress. Moreover, you worked hard to preserve your stupidity despite the assault of college and law school on your dim-mindedness. So by all means, celebrate your achievement, because if the liberals keep insisting that we have an obligation to provide education to all, well, hell, Rick, then you, Michelle, Rand, and your fellow idiots will truly be a minority. No wonder you want to eliminate the Department of Education. Happy Ides of March to you and the other Horn listeners, Bob. And to you as well, Philip. To you as well. Vigora. Or something. Clayton writing, I thought Booker T was a separatist. He was. He wanted separate but equal subculture. Whereas others argued for full integration and full vesting of rights. So what a place to start. Josephus J. Booger Munch. Certainly a fitting start for Friday on the front porch. Sandra's calling via Skype. Hey, Sandra.
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
Yeah, it's going good, I think.
Listen.
All things being equal.
All right, okay. Is it so apparently Obama on some interview tells Israeli TV that Iran nuclear bomb is over a year away. This is new information for me. I don't know about you.
He said
Iran is over a year or so from getting a nuclear bomb. U.S. President Obama has told an Israeli television channel a week before visiting Israel, warning that a military option remained on the table. So, now the last I heard was all the sort of, reports that I forget what they're called, but they're sort of periodic review from the intelligence community. I haven't heard this one. I mean, I heard that they were years away. They're at this stage or that stage, but now all of a sudden, it's just over a year coming from Obama's mouth. I mean, isn't that a bit disturbing to you?
That's a mite shocking, especially in light of the fact that I was just reading something the other day about the fact that, in the last 48 hours, about the fact that they have not achieved more than 20% enrichment.
Right. So I'm kind of, I'm just kind of confused. I realize that he's going over to Israel and whatnot, but what the hell? Netanyahu has said the question of Iran would be a top priority in his talk with Obama in Jerusalem. You think? Oh, my God. Why is he going over there? They don't like Africans. He better try to stay. Well, he's going to have to stay black and get well protected.
I don't know. Considering what Benjamin Netanyahu did to him during the electoral process. But, there's no right winger that he won't forgive.
Well, it's just, this whole trip is they're all upset in Israel because he's not speaking at the Knesset.
Yeah.
They find it insulting. And, I'm like, I guess that's the only thing Obama can do to send any kind of other signal. But if he's way in too deep, if he's coming out with, they're a year away, it's like, huh? I don't mean to laugh. I just find the whole thing.
Well, no, that's a little bit shocking. The year. A year?
Yeah. I'm like, what is that? And he's going on about how we want to find a diplomatic solution, but he keeps going back to, whatever's on the fucking table.
Yeah.
Anyway.
This kind of stuff makes me crazy. We got saber rattling in North Korea. And now, a year to a nuclear, what?
And I give credit, I'll give some leeway that, hey, he's going over there. I don't know. I never know what is a trial balloon or just bullshit to get through the trip or what's what, But, we've gone to war so easily. It's always scary, when you hear the executive talking like that since they have so much power now,
Yeah, and as far as not speaking to the Knesset is concerned, I guess in a way that to go there and not do that is a refusal to fully legitimize some of the rotten crap that government's doing.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's his sort of one way of, opting out a little bit from the apartheid madness. But it's too much. It's like, does Obama know that they have Palestinian-only buses?
I was about to ask you the same question.
The place is just, it's just riddled with apartheid-type program going on.
They've got Palestinians-only buses now. And then on top of that, did you see this? And I know, you and me, we wander off into sport and we can't help it, but this isn't a sports story. Did you see the uproar over the Jerusalem soccer team?
No, I didn't. What's that one? I missed that.
Well, and in a way, it's kind of reminiscent of when Bill Russell went to the Celtics, since Philip brought the Celtics up there a minute ago in his letter. But in point of fact, a soccer team in Israel, and something makes me want to think it was the Jerusalem team. It may not have been, but it's one of the older soccer clubs around there. Mm-hmm. And they declared, because the guy is a really good soccer player, they declared that they were going to sign a contract with an Arabic soccer player. And the fans went nuts. Crazy. Burnt down the clubhouse.
Oh, God. I don't mean to laugh, but I mean, it just sounds...
Burned down the clubhouse.
It sounds completely out of control. And I mean, I follow this one reporter, I think his name is Sheen, but he writes all about the ongoing just hatred of blacks, Africans who are in Israel. And I mean, they seem to have a riot every week against the Africans. I mean, like, they're, you know, attacking them and huge riots of sort of, you know, white Jews, you know, and it just sounds just, the place sounds like a horror show.
Yeah.
I mean, how, you know, I just don't even understand. It's, and they keep trying to tell us it's a democracy. I guess they were saying that about de Klerk's government too, weren't they?
Well, absolutely.
It was the
strongest democracy in the southern portion of the African continent.
Right, right. And, you know, and I don't, you know, I know this is a bit trite, but it's funny how the South Africans gave up. I mean, they gave up their nuclear weapons, you know, as soon as the Negroes were getting close to being in charge. Sorry, that's just an aside.
Get them on the trucks. Get them out of here.
Anyway,
just to give you a little bit of follow up on this. I mean, this is amazing. The name of the club is Beitar Jerusalem, and they signed the first two Muslim players in team history, Zaur Saliyev and Djabrail Kadiyev. And the person writing this article says, predictably, Beitar's supporters were madder than the NRA in a school zone. And every time these two Muslim men take the field on behalf of the team's own fans boo them. And if they score a goal, they turn their backs and leave the stadium.
Wow. Well, I mean, you know, we know across the world, the lowest common denominator always seems to be soccer fans. Sorry. No, you know, I know that may sound offensive, but yeah, they seem to be really out of control. Wow. Burning down the clubhouse?
Yeah. Burned down the team offices.
Oh my God.
You know, it was full of decades worth of bric-a-brac and championship trophies and
team stuff.
That, right. You know, the scarves and what have you, burned it down. I saw a photograph of an old man who was like the curator or whatever of the team museum, and he was just sitting there in tears with all these fire scorched and destroyed and melted and burned up decades of memorabilia around him.
Yeah, it's just kind of shocking. The whole state of Israel just is leaves me gobsmacked. I mean, it just sounds like a absolute nightmare for a lot of the population there.
Dig this. They took a banner. I mean, and when you read language like this, it's hard not to take that little walk back in history that none of us really like taking. There's a picture of them standing in the stands, and they've got this several, you know, 50 fan wide banner that reads, it's written in Hebrew, but the translation is, Beitar will always remain pure. Arbat Mach Fry, baby.
Who has that banner?
Huh?
Who has the banner?
The fans.
Oh, the fans. Oh, God. Okay. And so I guess that team, did they decommission it, or are they just, what happened?
No, they're struggling along, and bless their hearts, the two Muslim players are still playing. You know, they're cashing their paychecks.
Oh, right. Wow. Well, the other thing that I wanted to mention was the, I am so sick to death of these horrible, hideous Republicans, when something befalls them personally, all of a sudden they're liberal. I mean, this Bob Portman. You know,
I saw your tweet earlier today.
Oh.
You're just bad.
I just, you know, it's mind-numbing. And this shit, it gets celebrated in the media. Like, oh, wow. And it's just kind of like, I'm raising my hand thinking, Bob, do you have any unemployed kids? So maybe you can appreciate, you know, other aspects of, you know, rights and help that may come people's way. I mean, the idea that these reactionaries has to have something personal happen to them before they reflect on, oh, wow, maybe gay rights are important. This, and it's okay, and no one challenges this pig that, well, what about other people's kids? Do you realize there's other gay parents out there? I'm just saying, that'd be my first question to this asswipe.
Well, what if you're Matthew Shepard's mom and dad?
Oh, no. I mean, it's just hideous, you know? I mean, I just... And this whole thing about, well, my faith. It's like, you know, fuck you and your faith and your fucking gay son. You know, I mean, I don't know. I just am sort of... all of it just made me feel sick because in the same breath, he'll support dismantling every other sort of...
But see,
you know?
this is another one of those Rand Paul moments, okay? Because I've seen it all over the blogosphere today about, you know, the bold and courageous stand of Rob Portman.
That's
And it's just gross. You know, the fact of the matter is, it's kind of what you brought up a week or so ago. It's okay now with corporate America. So therefore, the people, corporate America, who give Rob Portman his marching orders, this doesn't have 10 cents worth to do with his son. This has everything in the world to do with the fact that him wanting to be invited to the right parties and get the right Christmas cards and sit down with the people who know which fork to use with the shrimp depends on him supporting gay marriage.
Well, I mean, no, but it's just, and I also, the other meme that I need to mention is the absolute risk-free existence of these disgusting people who are in charge. Their lives are completely risk-free. And, they're constantly making huge efforts to make everyone else's lives as risky and as miserable as possible. And then we have to turn around and listen to this motherfucker talk about he's had a come to Jesus moment because his fucking son is gay. Oh no, I was like,
your tweet
is disgusting.
Your tweet was perfect. I was against government funding for highways until I had to drive.
And
you're absolutely right. I was against unemployment compensation until I became unemployed. I was against Title II disability insurance under Social Security until I became disabled.
Pete Domenici, one of the most right-wing pigs in the history of the right wing, was all about getting government help for mental health because, oh, looky here, his daughter suffered from it. You see?
Yeah.
And I forget this other, I don't know who it was that had a stroke. And realize that, oh, wow, Medicare will help me get back to the Senate faster. Now I'm for some socialized medicine provided by the government. But what it speaks to is the most horrific lack of empathy ever on display. And it's hideous because the media is going to celebrate these pricks showing some compassion. And never acknowledge that, well, it's only because it's their own family members.
Yeah, because you know the old acronym NIMBY, not in my backyard.
Yeah.
We generally hear that as something that applies in the environmental movement. But, you know, there's a social NIMBY, too, and a cultural NIMBY. And that's what this was for Rob Portman, NIMBY. He was gay NIMBY, but suddenly the gay is in his backyard, and now he's sensitive. You know, I guess what? He's going to go out and join GLAAD PFLAG, people and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. I guess Rob's going to be marching in the gay pride parade next year.
Well, yeah, I mean, but it's just, it's...
Maybe, you know, somebody can deliver him flowers and chocolates.
No, it's just their M.O., and I mean, I just, you know, it just left me cold. I'm like, good for you, shit, you know? And it's just sort of, we have to hear all about it, you know? People praising this asshole.
And do you realize what this will do for him, Sandra? Whatever assholery else he wants to engage in, he's going to have an absolute carte blanche pass to do it. If he wants to stand up in the Senate and talk about how we've got to have a grand bargain and granny's eating too much, the for-profit media will say, well, he's a tough negotiator on social programs and the debt, but he supports gay marriage. So, you know, let's listen to him.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, exactly. And, you know, but in the meanwhile, though, someone like, I forget her name, Marcy, I forget, she's a progressive, I think she was, running for, anyway, when she did that whole thing where she was demanding that women stand up and acknowledge that they had abortions, you know, as a means of, you know, making it, telling your stories. But we, you know, she's not going to be praised in the media for stuff like that.
No.
You know, she's going to be denigrated. It's only these right-wing white men, Dick Cheney and his gay offspring, and now this man, and, you know, and it's like, oh, shit, I don't want none of my kids to be experiencing anything horrible in life. You know, I mean, all of it just made me feel ill. I thought, oh, God.
Well, it almost makes you want to imagine what dinner time was around the Portman household. Everybody's sitting down and saying their little prayer before dinner, and then Potter familius Rob Portman saying, son, still straight? Yeah, Dad. You, second son, still straight? Yeah. You still, you're not a lesbian yet, are you, honey bear? No, no, Daddy, I'm not. Okay, great. I still don't support gay marriage. Let's eat. Pass the green beans.
Well, I mean, and then that whole thing with that Negro conducting whatever helped the Crack Cracks Understand seminar at CPAC. You know, all that was just so painful and just hideous. And that horrible, I'm sorry, white dude who was he's sucking all the air out the room, talking about his deep, you know, disenfranchisement and whatnot. It was just, I just thought, oh my God, I hope you're getting paid. That's all I could think for that dude, that Negro's talking, because that was just hideous. And then once again, making slavery out to be something that was, beneficial for, us darkies is a constant thing with those people, ain't it? Man.
Yeah, it is. Because as I noted, Sandra, and this is, you know, this is cultural, not necessarily individual. You'd kind of have to go wandering around the South for a little while, and I would not suggest that you do that. I mean, you've got Southern roots, don't you?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Once removed, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, see, it ain't worth it. But it doesn't take very long wandering around the South before you run into one of these jackasses who says that, you know, slavery wasn't necessarily always a bad thing. There were good masters and bad masters. But it ignores the fact that there were masters.
No, it's absurd. It's just kind of, but of course the encouragement from the audience is, you know, that's, like I said, it's another day at CPAC. I mean, who's surprised by that bullshit?
They ought to be handing out red rubber noses and floppy shoes at the door.
Well, and they had Jindal making jokes about water being waterborne, and I'm like, you know, I said, that Negro is the last one to be talking about waterboarding with his exercising ass. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he did an exorcism. Really?
It's just like, oh, my God. So, yeah, and the thing that's really bugging me about the CPAC is that you have the social forum that brings 20, 30,000 people, and you got to hear about this CPAC the whole time that it's going on. And, you know, they never cover any kind of left or normal people gathering in the manner that they cover this.
No, hell no. I'm at a bunch of these things. There's nobody running around covering Families USA's good faith attempt to understand the Affordable Care Act.
And even that Netroot, which is probably one of the more well known ones, they don't get nowhere near the kind of coverage as this CPAC.
No, no.
It's just everywhere.
And I guess that's because everybody loves to go to the zoo.
I mean, I don't know. I just because I you know it's just full of these horrible. But then again.
But I'm guilty of it, Sandra. So I got to be careful about indicting it.
Well, I know, but it's just so freaky. I can see why on some levels. But I just was sort of amazed because every time I went to Reuters to read a story, the big headline was live coverage. You see what I'm saying? I'm like, oh, God, you go to AP and the same sort of thing. And it's just, I don't know, I don't get it because they're so, it's so such a hideous gathering of people. Horrible people.
But there's promote. You know there's a larger point to be made out of what you've just mentioned, and I'm glad you did it, because the fact of the matter is, once in a while, instead of just pointing to how far out crazy, running around naked in the middle of the road the right wing are, once in a while it might be beneficial for our side to talk about some damn solutions. And if you go to a place like Families USA. Or Netroots Nation, or some of these other policy-oriented meetings, you will hear, no kidding, real-world solutions. And frankly, it would be a real boon, I think, to our side to start getting some wider dissemination of ideas, because Lord knows the right wing, they're crazy ideas, but they're putting their ideas out there, aren't they? You know, there's Rand Paul wanting to balance the budget in 5 years and to eliminate the Department of Education, right?
Yeah, no, but the thing is, they have the national media as a platform. For every stupid, ridiculous idea that comes out, there's a network willing to share it with us all.
Yeah. Meanwhile, there was I don't know if you caught this or not, there was a little hearing in the, what was it, Senate Finance or Senate Banking Committee today?
Well, yeah, with the, I saw some, I didn't see it, but I was reading about some of it, J.P. Morgan, right?
Yeah, in which a report was released about not just what J.P. Morgan was doing before the crash, but what they are still doing. And it's crazy. I mean, out and out liars, you know, lying to Congress, lying to their mothers. You know, there's nobody Jamie Dimon won't lie to.
No, and all this, and no one knew about nothing. That's the thing that I took away from it. They didn't know anything. Even the main woman who ran the whole office, she didn't know anything. These people are being paid millions, and we're supposed to believe... Oh, I don't know. I didn't know what was going on. That's that, you know, it's just incredible. But listen, I got to read you the best tweet I've seen about this, Portman. Okay, eventually one of these Republican congressmen is going to find out his daughter is a woman, and then we're all set. Okay,
oh,
that's
who,
it.
Whose is that? That's brilliant.
That's someone named... I don't know, and Dash, I don't know who it is, but it was retweeted by Gotta Laugh. But yeah, that's it. That says everything to me. Yeah, I know, I mean, but that's...
Then we're set.
Yeah, at least, yeah, because it's absurd that this man's getting praised for that, because it's so, I said, how Ayn Randian of him, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's completely out of this world. But well, something else I want to ask you now.
I was going to tell you, and not because I'm just trying to dog this story, but there's more to the Israeli soccer story, real quick.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out that Israel in this summer, like in June, is hosting the Union of European Football Associations Under 21 Championship. Now, you reckon that all that Muslim go home is going to play well under those circumstances? That's
when is this happening?
That's this June. And you got a bunch of Beitar will always be pure types wandering around talking about racial purity. And there's all kinds of people play soccer in Europe, aren't there? I bet there's some young Turkish kids, maybe, that play soccer.
Yeah, no, I mean, that should be, wow. Maybe a lot of mothers are going to be like, and cut on that one.
Yeah. No.
I don't know if you know about this kid that got shot up in New York. Did you hear about this?
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
Well, I'm just, it's been 4 nights now of, kind of unrest and protests. I mean, you ain't seeing none of it in the news. At least I haven't. I've only seen it, on my timeline.
Yeah, I'm seeing it covered some in the progressive media that I follow, and you know, not covered merely in passing.
But obviously, the community, they're not buying the "oh, we found a gun near him." I mean, you know, because it's almost, if it wasn't such a horrible story, it's laughable now when it's like black males and pigs, and the black male always ends up dead. And we're supposed to now believe, oh, he was armed. Maybe sometimes the person is armed, but I'm not buying that one anymore. You know, I just find it laughable when they talk about, oh, we found a gun. Yeah, you can plant a gun. That's my opinion of the pigs now. I have no.
No, that was the first thing that came to mind. Isn't there always a spare drop gun in the cruisers?
It's like it's as bad as that. He had his hands tied behind his back, and he managed to shoot himself dead in the head. You know, yeah, of course.
Happens right? All the time.
He was hanging from a tree near the BART station, and his hands were tied behind his back, but we're going to call it suicide. Of course.
Sure.
So, I mean, that's, you know, at any rate, I'm just wondering if, because this is the this would be the fifth night of some sort of unrest in that area with the pigs. So obviously the community is beyond, you know, kind of fed up with it.
Well, and it kind of shines a light, doesn't it, Sandra, on the price that New York has paid for that much vaunted reduction in crime that the Bloomberg, the plutocrat, is constantly prattling on about, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, 5 million.
I mean, at this point in time, this young man is bad. I mean. The NYPD has gone into the pre-crime business, haven't they? And like something out of that dumbass Tom Cruise movie?
Right. Well, no, but I mean, and murdering young people now. I mean, you know, you can't walk. I mean, it's to the point where you need, if you of color, you better try to stay inside after dusk. Like those sundown towns back in the day when, you know, nothing ever changed.
Don't let the sun set on you here.
Right, and it's kind of like in New York, if you happen to be outside, you have no more rights, fair game, we can even kill your ass, and you better not do or say anything.
Well, while we are sort of on the topic, you got a couple of seconds for a sound bite?
Sure.
Because this is going to make you scream a little bit. Because here's Rob Portman, and now he's getting all that love, and Rand Paul's got him some progressive followers bringing him chocolates and roses and talking about his testicles. Well, the other right winger that America has had a little bit of a fling with is, of course, Chris Christie, right?
Oh, he calling people boy and whatnot.
Yeah, that's the clip I got. Chris Christie at a town hall. This is precious. If it'll play. But doesn't look like it. Oh, here it comes. Yeah, it's only a minute or so long. Here, any minute now. Took place in Paterson, New Jersey at a church in a town hall meeting. The hell was that? Well, okay. Oh, I get it. It starts out with a quote from Dr. King. When your first name is the N-word, your middle name is boy.
A man in the audience shouted out, "Fix the public schools." You can yell all you want about fix the public schools. Yeah, I hear you, boy. I hear you.
Ding.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, Chris Christie still hates public schools. He still hates unions, and he just likes government because, you know, he had a storm of the millennium blow his ass away. So, yeah, who else he gonna turn to for help? I don't mean to laugh. I know I sound crazy, but, you know, these people are just another syndrome of, oh, shit, it's affecting me. Help.
Yeah, and my white ass is up to my armpits in water.
Yeah, I need help. I'll take it from the darkie or whoever in the White House. Help now, you know. And so the progressives are so quick to praise these assholes. It makes me, I shake my head about the progressives sometimes. I'm like, damn, folks, you know, back up a bit.
Well, like I said, sometimes we're just not real smart.
Oh, my God. And, or no, just sort of giving too much credit to these nasty people.
What it does is it's a manifestation. It's actually a manifestation of goodwill. It may not be the sharpest, the brightest bulb in the socket, but it's a manifestation of goodwill because we think, well, you know, we're going to show that we can reach out and praise them when they do good things, and then they turn around, they bare their fangs at us, they bite our arm extending the olive branch off up to the shoulder, and we say, well, you know, I guess he had a bad day.
Well, I mean, that's sort of, and that's the thing about Obama, you know, when he keeps going back to these meetings, it's just like a sort of bad nightmare.
Right.
Trying to meet with these Republicans, it's like, oh no, again? You know, remember when he deigned to mention, that some cracker who arrested that, professor, and he ain't said nothing reasonable sense, you know? He learned that lesson. Why not learn the lesson of talking to the Republicans?
Yeah, because we really do have we've got another drop-dead date coming, don't we, Sandra?
Well, yeah, but he did apparently he made some quote saying, well, I don't really think a deal is going to happen. He said that the other day, so I think he's kind of giving up. I don't really know. All of it is really disturbing, because if he is giving up, so we're going to have 4 years of, you know, what is Obama going to be doing? That's why when I saw that quote about, oh, another year about Iran, I was like, oh, no, don't turn to war, Obama.
Please.
So they always go to the foreign theater, international politics in the second term. You know, that's quite common when the domestic is locked, and it's really locked now. So... I don't know. It's a bit of a worry.
And meanwhile, you know, after he did have his China and Silver Service sit down with the Republicans, you'll notice that one of the things that they came out talking about was Keystone XL, right?
Well, yeah, I saw that. You know, that was tweeted, and I looked at that. I thought, ooh, that's interesting. And then, you know, now that they're trying to back away from it, or what was that about, you think?
Well, I mean, I've got the Associated Press story right here, and it says Representative Lee Terry said Obama appeared conflicted on the pipeline, saying that many of the promised jobs would be temporary and that much of the oil produced likely would be exported. It's probably more like all of the oil produced, isn't it, Sandra? But Terry said Obama also indicated, and this is the part that just pissed me off a right little bit, Obama also indicated that dire environmental consequences predicted by pipeline opponents were exaggerated.
Yeah, no, see, that's the thing. And,
that's a direct slap in the face at Bill McKibben and James Hansen and, you know, the scientists.
Well, yeah, he doesn't want to, you know, I mean, he, you know, it's easy for Obama to frame just about, anybody as extreme, you know, and that doesn't bode too well, because in light of that Friday dump they did with the, it's the environmental assessment, when they said, oh, it's no problem. Did you know that that assessment was written by someone who worked for TransCanada?
Oh, I have no doubt. They wrote the last one.
And so it's just kind of like, good Lord. So I guess the more cynical people are kind of expecting him to he's going to okay it with some sort of carrot mixed in. You know how with Obama, no matter how dire it is, he'll try to balance it with something?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We'll have some good and some bad at the same time. Yeah.
So I can't wait to hear.
Spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down.
But he seems to think, he also is perpetuating the lie that, well, Canada will get it out no matter what, that lie. Which is also disturbing, because, well, no, you wouldn't be under this extreme pressure to do this if Canada could get all the revenue and all the benefits from it themselves, would you now?
No.
You see what I mean?
Yeah. So, the fact of the matter is, like I said the other night, it is cheaper for TransCanada to send it down through the heart of America than it is to fight the fight that they know they're going to have to fight to get it to Vancouver. And they're going to lose that fight.
No, but I mean, but these people are like, I mean, with Obama, when he's talking about, oh, it's exaggerated, when his dumb ass see a palm tree on the Arctic, is it going to be exaggerated then?
Yeah, right.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, because I saw this article where, you know, flowers and all sorts of green stuff are starting to grow further and further in the tundra. I said, oh, that's kind of unusual. I'm like, motherfucker, you know.
Yeah.
So nothing when seems foggy, too exaggerated.
When Foggy Bottom's underwater, you know, because there's some serious low ground down there around the Potomac. When Foggy Bottom's underwater, is it going to be exaggerated then, too?
Well, let me ask you something about this. I mean, how soon do you think they get that pipe completed? I bet it's going to be quick, huh?
Oh, this is not a 10-year program.
I mean, it's going to be done real quick. What do you think?
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, look at the ham-fisted way they're going about the southern end of it down in Texas now.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, you've got grannies being hauled off to jail over it.
Right.
Septuagenarian old ranch hand farmers.
Yeah, well, I don't know. But you can always say, if you have thousands of people protesting something, you know, in this ass backward society, it must be an extreme position, you see, which is what Obama is saying about the Bill McKibbins of the world.
Yeah.
Because you have some passion about something, it must be
extreme. I don't know. Obama may still be a little bit miffed at Bill McKibben for digging up Jimmy Carter's old solar panels and trying to bring him to him.
Yeah, well, anyway, I don't, you know, I just...
You've got a question in coming from Clayton. Clayton wants to know, Sandra, what you think of the Ed Schultz move.
Where's he moving to? That's my question.
Well, I think he's going to be on the weekend in between prison porn shows.
Well, I was laughing because I happened to tune into his show and he was trying to sell I'll be able to directly comment on the Sunday shows. You know, he's trying to spin it. You know, because I think most people, maybe you don't agree, but wouldn't it be seen as a bit of a promotion for Chris Hayes?
It is a promotion for Chris Hayes.
Okay. I just want to get that clear. You know?
I'm sure Rachel Maddow is going to be much happier having him as the lead into her show than Ed. Because...
There's some things that Ed Schultz, you know, he seems to be fairly genuine and informed about the role of unions, and I can't, you know, I think that's great.
Absolutely, he's been very well paid to be that. He's been very well paid to be that genuine.
And is he getting direct money from who?
Yeah. Oh well, I mean, Ed's whole story is a story of being. Carried by organized labor. And that, I'm not saying that as a criticism. It's just the reality.
Well, I mean,
he's still got a brother who's a non-union contractor, and he may own part of the business.
When is his show, when is Chris Hayes moving to a weekday format?
Next month.
Mm. Well, it'd be interesting to see what he does with that show. I mean, it's a different format, you know, it's a different type of,
Well, I think the one thing that everybody's interested in is to see if he's going to try to bring the weekend format over to that nightly show, because the one thing that stood out of what he was doing on the weekend, and which I found refreshing, was that it was not the same old tired parade of white men.
Oh, no.
As a white guy, you know, I mean, I think it's better. I mean, because...
No, but didn't he actually have some Palestinians shot car at the table one time?
He's had all kinds of people at the table. That's one of the things, that, you know, he's had more women and more people of color. And he's had more people who were not the usual so-called experts that get trotted out. You know, sometimes I think when I turn on the television set... If I see Democratic consultant or Republican consultant fonted underneath some one more person's name, I'm just going to start power vomiting. Because I think you can just hang outside of a bar in certain parts of Washington, D.C., and that qualifies you as a Democratic or Republican campaign consultant.
Well, next, if they could just get rid of that English challenge fucking Al Sharpton, that would be great. He needs to go away. Sorry.
I don't think Al's ever going anywhere.
Oh,
I mean, I remember old Al. I remember old Al, you know, he's kind of beefy, kind of chunky, you know, had the hair. And now it's like, it's like he went on Slim Fast from Hell. He's this little, tiny, skinny dude. What happened?
And his communicating is just like, what are you saying? I don't understand. You.
Have you ever seen the dude on Saturday Night Live?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, and it's just kind of like, I cannot argue with that whole presentation. So, you know, I'm not a huge fan of Al Sharpton. I just think that it's just kind of hard, kind of cringy. I don't even watch it no more. But anyway.
Truth be told, unless I'm catching a rerun of Rachel, I don't watch much of it anymore because... Sandra, I'm so tired of so-called experts, I could just bust.
Sometimes I watch the Chris Hayes if I'm up, you know, on the weekend.
Yeah.
But I even watch the Rachel Maddow because her lens is so partisan to the point of like, OMG, I can't even get with her. And she's, you know, she knows what she's talking about.
She's smart and she's funny.
Yeah. But I just find the sort of, you know, relentless kind of partisan stuff to be like, you know, and the security state stuff. I don't know.
That's that whole old thing about access, Sandra. You know.
Yeah, I understand. And with that whole, you know, with her going to the White House 12 times in his first term, I'm like, oh boy, okay.
Yeah, but that's coin of the realm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, because somewhere around the third invite to the White House, you start thinking, yeah, maybe I'm being a little rough on the guy.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying, yeah, all of it. So I I've kind of watched him. Everybody else is kind of
I have become kind of leery. Over the years, maybe it's just the cynicism of age catching up with me, Sandra, but I've become leery over the years of people who want to tell me how to think, right or left. Now you go to right-wing radio, right-wing TV, that's all it is, nonstop, wall-to-wall, you know, giving you talking points and telling you what you ought to think about XYZ. And then when you catch our side doing it, you just want to shoot them a memo and go, guys, we're progressive. We don't work that way. We have to work through things as a part of process. We have to reach conclusions, not have conclusions handed to us. And it's off-putting.
Well, I mean, I just think that I keep going back to that pipeline because, you know, I hear the sort of arguments, you know, from, you know, our side, Thomas Friedman notwithstanding, I don't know what happened to him, but, you know, it's just kind of disingenuous because they're not giving everyone all the facts, especially the idea that the tar sand industry will shrink and wither away without this pipe. When we're not told that. We're just told that Canada's our friend and this will help. In some sort of meta type of, energy needs, you know?
I keep expecting them to trot out red green or something to convince us that we need the pipeline. I mean, Jesus. But you're right. That industry is going nowhere if it doesn't go down that pipeline.
Right. Because otherwise any other method becomes prohibitive for their bottom line. And that's what it always comes down to. No, you know, the Koch brothers apparently are like desperate to get this because they stand to earn, you know, just huge, profits if they can refine this stuff. And, you know, they're trying to use the Venezuela, scare tactic. I mean, it's just...
Well, aren't they leveraged to the hilt, too, in this?
Yeah.
I mean, doesn't this... I mean, not only do they stand to make a lot of money if it gets bought, built, but they also stand to get their asses bitten if it doesn't.
Yeah, there's that... You know, so there's, you know, some major forces, you know, at work. And at the end of the day, though, they're going to have to really try to obfuscate or do something to prop up Dear Leader when he makes that decision, because, you know, he's going to get a fair amount of flack. So I'll be looking for the sycophants to come out.
Well, again, I fall back to my previous analysis, Sandra. If he were to say no to this thing, he would have the so-called environmental community hollering hurrah and praising and singing his praises and hallelujahs unto the heavens. But what he would have on the other side is the entirety of the right wing plus certain elements of the so-called left, either, you know, if he approves it, praising him, or if he denies it, declaring that he is Satan. You know, remember,
right.
remember, it's not just the Koch brothers. It's not just the American Petroleum Institute. It's hundreds of thousands of dollars from the Teamsters, from the carpenters, from the pipe fitters.
Yeah, no, I know. So, I mean, but he, you know, but likewise, couldn't he bring out some sort of gay, shiny object, too? Can he do that on that side, too? I'm sorry. Don't want to be floating around that time. Can he bring that shiny object out, too, when he's
right, I've decided to deny the pipeline because it impinges upon gay rights in Nebraska.
Who knows? I'm just being.
No, that's very, very cynical. Very cynical.
But
not uncalled for.
Well, it's just, you know. Anyway, listen, I got to tell you this one story, then I'll just let you go. But did you hear about these giant mosquitoes coming to Florida?
Yeah, the ones that when they bite you, it feels like your bones are being broken.
Stab, like a stab wound. Okay, so I'm looking at a picture of them. They have a regular mosquito, you know, the one you hate. Then they have this one. And I swear to God, it's like 10, 20 times bigger. It's horrifying. They're 20 times larger than most other mosquitoes, and their bites feel like stab wounds. They attack fish, wild animals, and pets. I mean, you know, this is happening. Going to happen in July.
Fluffy, they're going to. Oh no, yeah, that, right. And
they,
I guess the only possible response is to spray corporate biotoxins all over the state of Florida, right?
Well, I don't know what they're planning on doing, but they say, you know, you can't use any lavender on your ass. You got to use some DDT. I'm about to say, bring that shit back.
Yeah. Yeah, no, forget the citronella. They get high on citronella.
And to me, it's like I'm reading these articles, I'm thinking, where's the connection? I'm sure this shit is coming because of, you know, torrential rains that, you know, some climate change.
No, they were blown there. They were blown there, Sandra. Now, no hurricane has ever blown giant mosquitoes into Florida before, but now they've been blown there. Really?
They've been around. They've been around for a while, but it's just that they're expecting a huge batch of them this summer.
Right, because they were blown there, and conditions have been favorable for incubation. And
yeah.
See, do you remember? You remember that great old Peter Falk movie? It's one of my favorites, called The In-Laws with Alan Arkin, back in the late 70s. And he's the CIA agent, Peter Falk is, who can't tell the same lie twice. And there's this one scene around the dinner table where he says, "Yeah, I was doing some consulting work down in Central America. They got tsetse flies down there the size of eagles." And the first minute I heard about this mosquito story, that's what I heard. Tsetse flies the size of eagles. Because that's what these things are. They're monsters.
Well, I worked in Alaska one summer, and they got, you know, they make a joke and say the mosquito is a state bird. So the mosquitoes up there are pretty damn big. And they used to freak me out because they were huge. But these ones down here, it just sounds like sort of, just some, like a science fiction. Because I'm looking at this mosquito. I'm like, no way. And I've been down in Florida in July. It ain't pleasant, okay?
Yeah, all of a sudden, you know, that winter you moved away from to get to the warm and balmy winter gets traded out with the fact that wherever you moved away from does not have giant mosquitoes the size of eagles.
Well, I mean, when I was down in Florida, it was July, I was visiting a friend, and I'm like, literally, if you move, you're like, oh, my God, where's the shower? It was hideous. And so if you combine that with the flying cockroaches, and now you have giant effing mosquitoes that can, like, stab wound you, No. We won't be going down there.
So is Disney World just going to have deep showers that you walk under, kind of like the hot wax in the car wash?
I don't know.
On your way into the Magic Kingdom?
No, I'm going to keep my eye on this story, though, because that's not right. It's not right. That they say these things, they go through khaki, you know, those sort of docker-type pants and the whole nine yards. I'm like, oh, wow.
Yeah, they got snouts like drill bits.
They say wear long sleeves and all this sort of stuff. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, but that Magellan, that Columbia sportswear, I mean, I've got some of it for summer because it provides you some UV protection, which I badly need. And even if you take the sleeves down, no, that's fairly thin stuff. And those giant eagle-sized mosquito snouts will go through that fabric.
Oh, no, but see, Florida, though, you have, you know, they have this hideous outbreak of dengue fever. Now you have the giant mosquitoes. You know, the other sort of...
Don't forget the giant sinkholes.
Lord have mercy, that's too much.
I mean, some guy named Bush got swallowed up by one, and for about 15 seconds I was harboring some hope.
But
wrong Bush.
But to me, I'm like, wait, you know, why didn't these other people didn't leave? You know, once again... If I'm living somewhere and I hear a sinkhole has swallowed up a house, I'm out. I'm gone. You know?
Yeah.
I don't have to wait around to be told.
Yeah, well, and you know, even assuming you own the land, it's not land anymore. It's a sinkhole.
I'm gone. I'm not staying around. And there's this ongoing sinkhole, I think that's swallowing all of the bayou.
Yeah,
you
know, Louisiana. Yeah. And that has nothing to do with the hydrocarbon petroleum industry.
Oh,
nothing.
Dude,
absolutely nothing. That's not the sinkhole we're looking for. Hey, no, I got to throw one more your way before we go. You remember Geno Smith, Mountaineers quarterback?
Yeah. You know, is he being drafted?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he came out like number one in the combine or near it.
Oh, okay.
They're saying he'll go in the first 10 picks. So,
oh, wow.
So they had workout footage yesterday from up at WVU, and you know, my God, the guy's got biceps bigger than my thighs, and you know, the neat thing about him is he's a really smart, really intense, really studious young man with an art history major.
Mm.
Okay, this is not basket weaving. I mean, this guy can tell the difference between a Rubens and a Botticelli, for Christ's sakes. And so he's throwing these needle sharp seam passes, and his little outs to the sideline are perfect. And so yesterday in the workout, he was just dropping bombs into the arms of receivers in stride. Yeah, he had a tough senior season. The season kind of collapsed on him, but he was brilliant in large part. And he hits receivers in stride the way that people like Montana used to, you know, where they never miss a step. They just keep rolling at full speed on into the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're doing the analysis there, and you know, you got ESPN talking head sitting next to Ron Jaworski. And, you know, Jaworski, you know, with his Sunday breakdown and everything, the guy really does try to analyze football like a science. And as far as I can tell, he's pretty decent about it. So he's sitting there saying, yeah, all my questions have been answered. This is one of the best workouts I've ever seen. Meanwhile, they got skinny little dude sitting next to him, and he says this. And I thought of you when I heard it because I knew it would resonate. Yeah, but you know what? Jamarcus Russell's workout was the best I'd ever seen, and look where that wound up. And I thought, Jesus Christ. You know, really, does he bring up if they were looking at some quarterback, maybe that Chris Klein kid from Kansas State, if they were looking at him, would he say, yeah, but think about the workout of Ryan Leaf. How did that work out? No, hell no. It's Jamarcus Russell. It pisses me off.
Well, that's not surprising by that. They have some people there that are just quite despicable, actually.
Well, yeah, they do. I mean, that's part of the fun of watching it, isn't it?
Oh, God.
But I hope good things happen for him. Sandra, you have yourself a wonderful weekend. It's been a great conversation.
All right, you too.
All right, see ya. Bye. Our buddy Sandra helping us wrap up the week with this Friday on the front porch. We've seen a little bit of buffering, but not near as bad as what it was last night. So, cross your fingers. And again, I'm going to try to get the rerun stream going as soon as I can. It's a hardware thing, apparently, because I live in indolent boredom. Michael writing in, he says, Florida. So this summer, Florida is going to look like Starship Troopers. Is that what we're saying? Yeah, basically. And they've got the machine guns for it, too. And at least NASA's already down there. Maybe we ought to increase their funding and get them fully militarized. Don't even whisper that kind of crap into the universe's ear, Michael. For all we know, they already are fully militarized. I mean, you've seen Iron Sky, haven't you? Oh, who put missiles on their platform without telling anybody? Yeah. Darlene writing in. She says, isn't it interesting how the right wing screams that government stimulus designed to put Americans back to work, say by rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure, is not going to solve the unemployment problem because such jobs are only temporary. You know, once the bridges and roads are all rebuilt and repaired, all those workers will be out of work again. Yet the Keystone XL pipeline will solve the unemployment problem. It will create 20,000 plus jobs, damn it. So the pipeline has to be approved. Well, Darlene asks, what happens to all those jobs when the pipeline's finished? The same thing that happened to all those jobs when the Trans-Alaska pipeline was finished. People who had been paid exorbitant amounts of money and had quickly had it removed from them. I mean, consider the economics, and I can't speak to this with any expertise because I'm not up there or anything, but consider the economics in North Dakota, in the burgeoning oil fields there, or gas fields, or whatever they are, where someone who bought 200 acres for $10,000 20 years ago can turn around and now sell it for $750,000, where the houses are all prefabs that houses that used to rent for $275 a month are now renting for $2,500. See, that's the little economic dodgery that goes on, because on the one hand they'll tell you, oh, look, the pay is very good in the oil patch, but they don't tell you that a six pack of Budweiser costs $975. Because the way this little flim-flam operation works is whatever they give with the right hand, they take away with the left, and vice versa. The only reason for paying somebody good wages is to then extract the wages from them. And ain't a whole lot of folks working in the patch putting back a lot of money against a rainy day. You're just saying. So there's that. Oh, by the way, thanks to Sal for answering Robert's challenge from Australia. It is deeply appreciated. And now we are on our way, but we still have a good long ways to go to meet Robert's $150 challenge and about an hour to get it done in. So any help along the way is vastly, vastly appreciated. Thank you very kindly. It's how we stay on the air, and we have bills that are due before the weekend is out. It just is. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, happy weekend, Bob.
Oh, thank you, Kevin. The same to you.
Well, I got to say, you talking about that pipeline, I saw a tweet last night from Luna, L-I-N-U-A.
Mm-hmm.
I forget. You familiar with them?
I recognize the acronym or whatever it is, but yeah.
Yeah, it's a union. And they had a post up last night about how the jobs in with the pipeline had to be approved. And I just thought, you know, you just lost all my support because that pipeline will be the death of a lot of things, maybe even you, and you're going to sell out for a few bucks. And they had these ads that I hear on the radio, and I forget which show I hear them on, and I don't listen to anything but progressive shows, so, you know, it's a progressive show.
Yeah, that's the laborers. Thank you. Sparky just told me that. Yeah, Laborers International. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, that seems to be the state, like you and Sandra were talking about, where progressives just want to praise somebody for one thing while ignoring, on the other hand, what is happening. Like, man, I would like to see that clip of Christie in New Jersey just go viral. You know, boy, really?
2013.
You know?
Well, it is at least a nice, it's nice to have a reminder that tigers don't change their stripes, nor leopards their spots, nor Republicans their essential defining racist tendencies.
Yep. And, but it's, you know, you're right. You have to think about that in that. Because I do get mad at those people who want to praise Rand Paul for his position on one issue while ignoring the other 995 that he's wrong on, but it is a sign of goodwill on our part. We're willing to take that step of, you know, welcoming somebody. But I'm all out of doing that when it comes to people like Rand Paul. It can't be done anymore. You can't ignore the 999 things that have been done wrong for the one thing that's been done right. And even the one thing that was done right, you have to question what the motives were behind it.
Yeah.
Like Sandra was talking about with the mosquitoes in Florida, there's something there we're not being told.
Well, but okay, there's a classic case in point. Rand Paul and his compadres don't believe that the government has any business trying to keep mosquitoes down. That's something for the free market to accomplish.
Right.
At however much cost the free market charges and Floridians are willing to pay.
Yep. And of course, if those mosquitoes were then to begin to really interfere with their business enterprises, guess who they'd be going to, hoping for a fix, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what's really irritating about it, is we progressives don't want to acknowledge that fact that, just like you're talking about with the money in Alaska, what they want to give you in the right hand, they're taking away in the left hand. And I have no tolerance for it anymore.
Well, that's because you've got a functioning brain, Kevin, and you realize at some point in time that fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. It really is. It works that way. It really does.
Yeah. It's not just a functioning brain, Bob. Over the years, I'm tired of hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is different from a mistake. You can make a mistake, and I don't know how to put that in exact words, but a mistake is something you do that you're not going to repeat, hopefully. Hypocrisy is when you say one thing and then do the exact opposite on a regular basis. And that's what we have going on here. In the South, you know, I grew up with that lie of the heroic Confederate soldier and, you know, the various things that we were taught growing up in the South.
Oh, the lost cause.
Right, yeah. And how they never gave up. And
we knew we was going to get whooped, but daggummit,
right.
Principles just required us to step up and stand up and be willing to shot down for our freedom, which is a bunch of hogwash. That's a bunch of revisionist crap that was invented post-1870, post-1875, post-1880 in an effort to rehabilitate a whole bunch of people who had moved on up into the corporate hierarchy and were a little bit tired of being referred to as committers of treason.
Yep.
I think of Longstreet.
Well, Lincoln was a good man in that way for not wanting to take revenge, but he should have hung every one of those people that committed that treason against the United States for seceding. And we ought to be charging these people today who are making these secessionist talks with treason, because it is treason. But we're not doing it. And the more we tolerate it, the more it proliferates. But in listening to you talk about that and read that letter from Frederick Douglass, I realized we've got to look at the South as no different than we look at the Nazis. No different whatsoever. There's nothing heroic about the South. It was evil in every sense of the word, just as Nazism was evil in every sense of the word, and there was nothing heroic about that. And until we begin to do that, things aren't going to change.
Right.
Sorry, Bob.
No, that's okay.
Pain. I was trying to get a pain pill down.
Oh, sorry.
I wanted to mention that sinkhole down there in Florida.
Yeah.
That's where I grew up. I grew up about a mile and a half, 2 miles away from that thing. It's a little place called Sefner, Florida. They reported it as Brandon, which is a little bit bigger, but in talking with my parents about it, they had absolutely no warning. It had been examined like 2 months prior when the homeowner was trying to get insurance for the house, and no problems. Everything passed inspection. And I'm thinking, what are we not being told there? For a whole house to collapse just like that?
Well, there are lessons to be learned about attempts to have limitless growth on extremely fragile ecosystems.
Yep.
And Florida is that, if nothing else. I'm reminded, Kevin, of that map that I saw a week or two ago of what the coastline's going to look like in, 500 years? And I don't mind thinking long-term like that, because I think it's beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
The Mississippi River Delta is going to be 200 miles upstream.
Yep.
Everything that we recognize as southern Louisiana is going to be gone. Southern Mississippi, gone. The Mobile Bay, the Mobile, Alabama, gone. Panama City, Pensacola, gone. Corpus Christi, Galveston, gone. And probably every bit of at least half of the entire state of Florida. The part that the tourists love, gone.
Yep.
Miami, gone. Daytona, gone. Fort Lauderdale, gone. It's literally underwater.
Yep. And it's over a 500-year span. So.
Well, what is there to suggest, unless the whole place just turns into a sinkhole? What is there to suggest, Kevin, that people are not going to continue pouring into Florida?
Yeah.
I mean, with the exception of what we did to the first peoples who lived here, we've never really seen full-on panic-driven mass migration in this country.
Nope.
I mean, we're talking about refugees and people on foot.
Yep.
And the thing about those kind of movements is all you have to do is acquaint yourself with the ancient history, and you find out pretty quick that those things don't work out well, because whoever it is the refugees are coming toward don't want them there.
Nope.
I mean, the Chesapeake Estuary is underwater in 500 years. I mean, there may very well be water lapping at the foot of Capitol Hill by that time.
Yep. Well.
And every time I go to D.C., and I'm getting ready to go there here in another week or so, I always stand around looking at the magnificent federal buildings. And it's not a wish or anything. It's just an attempt, because if you've ever seen anything in ruins, you realize that everything can be ruins.
Yep.
And I look around and I wonder, you know, that Capitol in its finished form is 150 years old because they finished the Capitol Dome in 1863.
Yep.
It is 150 years old. Anybody want to take bets on that thing living to be 550 years old?
The way we're going, I won't take bets on it being another 100.
Well, a lot of people are there, right, exactly.
Yeah. And the calculation for that of how much you lose each year for the next 500 years, you don't notice it creeping up on you. You're not going to notice a huge difference in your lifetime, and your child isn't going to notice a huge difference in their lifetime, but it creeps up until 500 years from now.
Right, because of the short span of human life makes us tend to always say, well, it's always been this way. Well, it hasn't.
Yep.
You know, Venice was originally built on islands.
Yes. Yep.
And now it has to be protected from being entirely inundated.
Yep. And you look at the mentioning the ruins. I've been to Rome and Athens, and you've got the ruins there. And it's not hard, like you said, to picture a city like Washington being that way, because that's the way the world is. Cultures come, cultures go. And we Americans have this silly little thing that, no, we can't. That can't happen to us. We're different than the rest of the world, and I got over that lotion a long time ago. But it seems to be pervasive in everyone's mind that what is going to be 100 years from now, and it just ain't true. And I don't know what the solution is, because I wanted to tell you. It got up to near 80 here today, Bob. Colorado Springs, 15th of March, 7,000 feet up, near 80 degrees. And people,
well, that's because you're closer to the sun.
Yeah, yeah. This is our snowy season, March and April. This is when we get all the snow that's beneficial to us down here on the Front Range. It's 80. Cold front's coming through, and it'll be 50 tomorrow. But, you know, 80? I've got the windows open, and I've seriously considered earlier today throwing the air conditioner in the window because of that. It just, the people want to deny global warming, and you tell them the science of it, and they still want to live in denial until the next superstorm comes along. And their house gets wiped out, which goes back to what you were saying about until it happens to you. You hate government assistance until you're the one that needs it, and then you're all for it. You're against gay marriage until your son comes out as being gay, and you're all for it. And
consider. Just had a note in from Fritz out in Arkansas, Kevin, and he said, the future of the Mississippi Delta. He said, the Gulf of Mississippi, Little Rock being a coastal city, Memphis gone, these are sobering scenarios. Yes, they are.
Yep.
And the thing is, that whole area is lined with people who won't, you know, there's an old joke that was told in Sunday school, so it's a pretty clean one. And I don't remember the entire setup, but it's a conversation between Noah and God. And the punchline to it, you know, Noah's like, you know, God, they're going to make me look real silly here. I mean, we live in the middle of a desert and I'm building a boat. I mean, come on, God. I mean, are you really, why should I do this? and the punchline to it, and when some, you know, mush-mouthed Southern preacher was delivering, it was much funny. He said, then a big booming voice came down and said, how long can you tread water? And that's, you know, that with the climate change denialists, that's what it is. But the thing is, Kevin, they don't intend to tread water. They intend to tread us.
Exactly.
Okay? If something catastrophic happens and that time comes, the right-wingers who have, you know, are keeping their guns in case, you know, the zombie dark people hordes try to take our food, they're the ones who are going to gun up and go take other people's. I mean, consider, I've talked about this before. Miami, the area of Miami that is on the highest ground is the area of Miami that is occupied by the poorest people. Now, where do you reckon they're going to go?
Exactly. Yep.
They're going to be thrown, their bodies will be thrown out to sea while the well-heeled folks stand on their ground waiting for the helicopters to come and rescue them.
Yep. Yeah, and they do it so sneakily. They claim it's urban redevelopment or something like that. I've seen it here in Colorado Springs where they've done that in the poor ends of town. And it's urban redevelopment. It's going to improve things. But what about the people that are getting thrown out of their homes and have no place to go? Like you're talking about the pipeline, about the people that are getting thrown out of their homes in Texas and getting thrown in jail because they won't leave. And, yeah, it's just sad. When this happens with the lower part of the United States, it's 500 years, but you got to wonder.
Oh, it's not just the lower United States. Boston's underwater, New York's underwater,
yeah.
Newark's underwater.
Right, I understand what you mean, but you
Baltimore's gone.
What happens?
Philly?
Would it be one cataclysmic event?
No, it's not going to be. That's why. Well, remember the legislature of the state of North Carolina insisted that the word sea level rise be removed from all scientific articles because that there is code for them liberal. Global warming alarmists.
Yeah. And I know I'm not saying the whole thing is cataclysmic, but there's got to be some cataclysmic.
No, it'll be a half inch here, inch there.
I'm thinking, you saw that derecho, which you didn't even know the word until last year, hit you there in West Virginia.
Yeah.
Is that what starts, that's what I'm getting to, is that what starts it off? You know, do we have those kind of events that start that?
Yeah, what we eventually have is a series of disasters that we are no longer capable of dealing with. And there are natural disasters and there are man-made disasters. For instance, the Republican House of Representatives right now, Kevin, is a man-made disaster.
Exactly.
So if you take, you know, a few years of these superstorms and you couple that with people who, for reasons of their politics and their greed and their sociopathy, do not believe that government has any purpose in trying to protect the people that are the government in the first place, you know, we the people of the United States, then eventually, over time, you have more of these things hit and more of these things hit and more of these things hit until you are no longer capable of dealing with them and you just don't bother to rebuild. Again, history and so-called prehistory are littered with examples of that.
Yep.
Where, you know, eventually you abandon the place.
Right.
And you just go back, you know, you go back into the forests and go back to your ways of living. Unfortunately, a lot of us have no idea what that was. You know, when the Maya people went back into the forest and gave up on having giant city-states that were constantly at war with each other, they were the ones who, in the first place, were growing all the food for the people who weren't doing any work.
Right.
So they just said, okay, well, you know, still got our seeds. We'll go back into the highlands and raise more maize and raise more beans and raise more squash. But this time we don't have to bring any of it to your dead, non-working asses.
Yep. Yep, and I'm open to scenarios that like that take place in not too distant future.
But, you know, I wander around Washington, D.C. when we're up there, and two blocks over on the Pennsylvania Avenue side, there's a little tiny grocery store, and, you know, around the corner on the Massachusetts Avenue side, there's a little tiny grocery store. And that thing would be picked clean of food inside of a day. Most of, you know, most of our cities cannot support themselves. All of our cities cannot support themselves. And it's all reliant upon factory farming and genetically modified organisms. We are perched, you know, and this is not the part of the program where I tell everybody to go out and buy their rice and beans. It's always good to have some around and maybe 100 gallons of water or something. But that's if that's just for the normal stuff that happens, the normal weird stuff. And besides that, I don't tell anybody to go do anything on here anyway, with the possible exception of helping us end a nightmare in Appalachia. But we are perilously perched. And you know, it's not even just the cities. This little tiny backwater, backwoods the place that I live could not feed itself if something disastrous happened in the middle of winter and we had to wait for a growing season.
Nope.
Most people would die.
Yep.
And so, you know, that's one of the things that the Malthusians talk about. You know, Malthus was roundly dismissed and criticized, but there are people out there that still talk about the big die-off, and there's a reason to think that it is out there. I mean, my God, what, 2 billion people? No, half of the planet, I think. Half of the human beings inhabiting this planet right now, Kevin, do not have clean water to drink.
Nope. Yes. And the other half of us don't seem to care.
Meanwhile, I happened to be somewhere the other night, and I saw this thing on the Weather Channel, of all places. Reality television is happening on the Weather Channel now.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I'd seen some pretty stupid reality television. Well, this one took the cake. I mean, we've seen Mussolini, you know, Caribou Barbie, the half-term governor quitter. We saw she got a reality program. There's a reality program about people who dance in outlandish costumes. There's a reality program about people who go to the pawn shop. There's a reality program about people who root through storage bins. There's a reality program about ignorant people who put their little baby daughters in terrifying beauty pageants.
Yep.
So you think at this point that they've got the bases covered, right? I was fit to run out of the room screaming the other night when I said, you know, I go to the Weather Channel for the freaking weather, okay?
Yep.
So they've got this reality program about people who sound like maybe they're from Iceland, who get in a boat and go out. I kid you not, I was not hallucinating. They get in a boat and go out in the North Atlantic and shoot rifles at icebergs. Really? And it was an hour of this. And you know, the young whippersnapper on the boat is complaining because he's only got pickles and boiled eggs for lunch. And he says, well, I can't deal with this. We're going to have to make some culinary changes on this here boat.
Oh.
And they're taking a .30-06, or I don't know, maybe it's a 300 mag. You'd really want a big bullet. And there was this digression, oh, they changed their ammunition from a little NATO round to a blah, 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 blah. You know, one of those bullets that looks like a little miniature intercontinental ballistic missile. And they are literally shooting at the iceberg in hopes of knocking off big enough chunks of ice, wait for it, that they will then go and capture and bring aboard the boat, and then they will go and sell the ice to someone who melts the glacial, the iceberg ice and bottles the water to sell to people who will pay $3 a bottle for a pint of water.
Yeah.
I mean, I really, it was straw in the tequila bottle time.
Oh, my God. Yes, well, I watch very little TV anymore, not because I can't see. I think that's because I can see, you know.
And you care not to.
Right, exactly. It just,
I mean, I'm sitting there thinking, wait a minute, boys, move in a little bit closer. Get the Panzerfaust out. Get the bazooka. How about a Stinger anti-aircraft missile? A grenade launcher, at least, an RPG, something like that.
Yeah.
You're shooting at it with a deer rifle, for Christ's sakes. Meanwhile, I'm sure that the NRA was just tickled pink, because it wasn't on the Hunting Channel. It was on the Weather Channel.
Yep.
Help me, Jesus.
Hey, that brings up my next quick topic. I wanted to ask you about this Schultz thing. If it's a promotion for Chris Hayes, what is it for Ed Schultz?
Oh, it's a demotion.
Yeah. And the question, and I haven't watched MSNBC in months, probably 6 months. But why? I thought his show was doing relatively well. What were the issues there that made this come about? And if he's going to take that demotion to the weekends, why doesn't he just bag it entirely and go back to the radio show?
Well, I mean, he's still got the radio gig.
Right, I know, but why do the thing about...
Because MSNBC's checks are still clearing.
Well, yeah, I guess, but I don't understand.
But see, MSNBC isn't really interested in the demographic of people who work for a living.
Right.
Or people who are members of unions.
Right.
You very seldom hear any kind of labor coverage on Lawrence O'Donnell or Rachel or Chris Matthews, or, I mean, you know, they'll talk about unions on Morning Joe only so long as it takes them to tell us that unions are no longer necessary.
Yep.
And, frankly, you know, Ed is just, he is gratingly not a fit inside that lineup.
Well, maybe, and I know one of the things I said long ago is that whether or not he sincerely believes in the message, at least he's getting the message out there. But, like you said, MSNBC, it doesn't fit. And that's one of the things that grates on me as well, is that progressives aren't, from the president on down, I shouldn't say progressives, the supposed progressives in the House, Senate, and presidency, are not dealing with real progressive issues. They don't want to touch them.
There's a tiny handful that do. I'm not.
Well,
I won't.
10% maybe.
Yeah, I won't damn Bernie Sanders or Alan Grayson with that faint praise.
No. I don't mean them, but it's so short a list of people.
But that, on the other hand, I mean, can we pass out a little praise where it's due? The House Democrats introduced a minimum wage increase in the House. It was, of course, defeated. But they didn't do the $9 that Barack Obama was talking about. They
right.
They introduced $10.10 an hour, I think it was.
Yep.
And, you know, little golf clap for them.
Oh, yeah. I have no problems with
Although that. I couldn't help but note that 6 Democrats voted against it.
Yep. And those 6 Democrats, I think names ought to be taken and plastered widely about the interviews and, you know, don't vote for these people, primary them out, get rid of them, tell them to change the party affiliation, but you're not part of us. And, you know, that's...
And by the way, just as a little reminder, Clayton just wrote in, Kevin, and he said in terms of monumental calamities, you know, all at once kind of things, he said, think Yellowstone caldera.
Well, if the caldera really went, I'm not here, and I'm, what, 500 miles away?
Yeah. I mean, what was it? Was it the BBC that did a little mini-series on that a few years ago? It's fascinating.
Yep.
But it pointed out the fact that with something like that, we have absolutely no ability to cope.
Yep.
None.
And it is based in fact, because there are things going on with the caldera now that aren't being reported. The temperature changes, the fact that in some parts of Yellowstone you can't walk in it without your soles getting melted, things like that. And so it's a a 500-year event, 1,000-year event?
I'm not sure. It may be longer. The cycle may be longer than that.
Yeah, maybe, but I know we're overdue for it. And Alex Jones wasn't the one that told me that, so, you know.
Oh, I was hoping to go a whole show without any mention of him, but I always hope to go a whole show without any mention of him. I'm kidding, Kevin. It's awful good talking to you this evening, my friend. Have a wonderful weekend, all right?
Hey, Bob, thank you, and thanks for the work you do. And one more thing I want to add. I caught the end of Dr. Bill's show the other night, and if Dr. Bill's listening, I want to tell him how much I appreciated that. And he was talking about people calling in. It does take a while because of the technical issues and the time difference and everything for at least me to get into that schedule. But I will be listening on Monday and hopefully calling in. But, you know, we're out there. We're supporting you. And I just wanted to say that because just the last 15 minutes of what I've caught, like you were saying yesterday, is just so special that, you know, you're mesmerized by it, and you don't hear it anywhere else. So,
no, that is a guarantee. You will not get what Dr. Bill is doing anywhere else by intellectual, pseudo-intellectual, phony intellectual, what have you.
No, and for the 15 minutes that I did catch of it yesterday, because I totally forgot about the show being on, and I was busy, but wow, I just sat there and listened, you know, and couldn't take my ears away, as it were. So I just want to encourage him. You know, the Horn family is out there, and we are going to listen to this program and participate, so don't get discouraged. We're going to support you and Dr. Bill, and we won't give up on that. So,
well, anyway. Thank you, Kevin. I do appreciate it. I know Dr. Bill will, too.
So, have a good evening.
All right. You, too. Bye now. Our buddy Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. Just a reminder, we are trying to raise up matching funds for Robert's Australian Challenge. He's got $150 on the table. He'll kick in if there's $150 to meet it. If there's $150 to meet it, and we're at $10. So thank you for the help we got there, and hopefully that 10 will get some friends. A couple of emails I missed along the way. Till writing in, it says, I hope the Palestinian soccer players score early in the games. Hear, hear. I was looking for something there a minute. Oh, well. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Juanita from Columbus.
Well, hey, Juanita. How are you this evening?
Oh, I'm doing fairly well. How are you doing?
Well, it's been a little bit weird this week. Technical glitches, gremlins. Hardware
right.
Going bad, but you know what? I'll make it. We've got a Prism broadcast tomorrow coming up, so I know that my brain will be all fired up with lots of really cool historical stuff, and that'll make the weekend better.
Oh yeah. Well, listen, I wanted to talk a bit about Ed Schultz. I don't know. I missed the show yesterday, so I have to catch up. But did you know that Ed used to be a right-wing Republican?
Yes, he absolutely did.
And he ran for Congress as an anti-gay, anti-abortion candidate, and he lost. His road to liberalism, he said, had to do with his wife, Wendy.
Right.
But I used to listen to his show when it first came on, and you could tell he was Republican. He's come a long way. I do think he's serious about the working class. I think maybe it was just a gig at first, but I do think he really is concerned about the working class. He did come to Columbus a couple of times when Kasich was trying to, do away with the unions here, and it was very helpful. He came here once before when it had something to do with unions and did a really great show. And what's interesting, though, the so-called really progressive person, Dennis Kucinich, was missing in action. When we were having the controversy with Kasich over unions, and Kucinich was missing in Ohio when we had the 2000 election and the 2004 election, and you know that Ohio was a mess. It was, Bob, it was...
Oh, yes.
Horrible. Bob... Yeah, they stole that election. They stole the 2000 election with the help of Secretary of State Kenneth Blackwell here in Ohio, and they did it in 2004. And it was, as long as I live, I will never forget what went down here. It was utterly awful. But so a lot of these guys who... say they're progressive. I don't know. You know, to me, I mean, for some of them, it's a gig, you know, and, you know, for example, Lawrence O'Donnell, look, he was on the McLaughlin report for years, and I don't recall him speaking, you know, boldly as a progressive. You know, I know now he gets so passionate until I think he's going to have a heart attack. But, you know, a lot of these guys, okay, Cenk Uygur from the Young Turks, he was a Republican. I mean.
So you've noticed that too, have you, Juanita, that there's a lot of people who had a, oddly enough or coincidentally enough, had a come to glory moment. Long about the time that they realized that there was no percentage in being another right-wing talker.
Yeah, and you know, Stephanie Miller.
And I'm not gooning on anybody, understand.
And I'm not either, because we didn't have any voice in mainstream media during the Bush administration. And if it wasn't for Air America, we wouldn't have had any kind of progressive voice at all. And because, quite frankly, mainstream media didn't allow Democrats on television during the Bush administration.
No, and if they were there, they were removed. Do you remember what was done to Phil Donahue?
Yes. Yes. And people forget that Savage was his show on MSNBC. What's his name? Crazy Michael Savage or Michael Wiener.
Yeah, the Savage Wiener.
Yeah, yeah. Tucker, Bowtie Tucker.
Yeah.
He was on there before. And Rachel got started by appearing. Of course, she was with Air America. But then she got a gig appearing as an occasional guest on Tucker Carlson's show. And then when we had the 2008 election, that's when Rachel was given her show. So even though, I don't like what's going on with the Democrats, that they have become so weak and they're so, has a defeatist attitude. At the same time, if they had not won Rachel, and those few progressives, if they really are progressives, which I think Rachel is for sure, would not have a gig on television. And make no mistake about it, if Romney had won, they would be gone. They would have started firing I really believe that.
I tend to concur with you, Juanita. Of course, the other side of that coin is that MSNBC is being credited in no small part for being part of the re-election pushback that got Barack Obama re-elected. I don't know. You look at the viewership numbers, and this is just a fact. This is, and it's not about necessarily about the product. It is about the attenuated nature of cable viewing now. You know, back in the day, there were three channels, right? You probably remember that. I do.
Right.
Well, now to quote Bruce Springsteen, 167 channels and nothing on.
Oh, yes.
But the fact of the matter is, whether it's MSNBC or Fox or CNN.
Right.
Or any of the other cable news outlets, here's the sobering fact. SpongeBob beats SpongeBob SquarePants beats the pants off of all of them.
Yeah.
SpongeBob has bigger numbers than Fox. SpongeBob has bigger numbers than MSNBC. Okay.
Oh, I believe it.
I have no doubt that Dancing with a Millionaire or America's Got Hemorrhoids or whatever reality program and Here Comes Honey Boo Boo Chow. They've all got bigger numbers than Fox. And, of course, Fox is the elephant in the room.
Well, have you ever heard of a book that came out in 1960 called Nation of Sheep? It was written by a man named William Lederer, who I think it's William Lederer. And he wrote also a book called The Ugly American. But in the book Nation of Sheep, in the beginning, he talks about a mighty nation that is about to fall. And he says, because of his people, I had to book because the last time I talked to you, I've moved and I still haven't unpacked stuff, but I would.
Oh, the hell of the boxes.
I would read you the first couple of sentences, but he talks about this powerful nation is about to fall, and because its population is deeply involved in entertainment and comic strips and not paying attention to their government. And he was talking about the United States. And if you read that book, you will, and what it says about the media is exactly true today.
You know what's interesting about that? As you were talking, I was just looking it up, Juanita. Uh-huh. And yes, William J. Lederer wrote A Nation of Sheep. And then, and this is so Orwellianly classic for Fox News, the Fox News blowhard Andrew P. Napolitano authored a book by the same name.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes.
You know,
he wrote that it's a wonderful book, and I tell you another one by a man named Philip Slater. And these are short books. They're a couple hundred pages. It's called The Pursuit of Loneliness, and it was written in the 70s. And Philip Slater in the book warns progressives after Nixon, he said, be very vigilant. He said, because if the right wing ever gets a hold of this country, it will terrorize it into submission. And, of course, he was right. With 9/11 and everything. That's another, it's a quick read on American culture, on the whole American culture, and it touches everything. Getting back to the media and who was a progressive on television, David Corn, for example, is touted as a great liberal. However, David Corn, there are people here in Ohio who desperately trying to get him to write about what went on here during the elections of 2000-2004, and he refused. He's one of those liberals that does not believe what happened here in Ohio happened. Even though, if you go to the site, free documentaries org. I think it's a Canadian site, Bob. But your listeners...
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt of what happened in Ohio in 2004 now.
There are about five documentaries on the subject on that particular...
Yeah, and whatever failings he may have had, I will always at least have some respect for John Edwards for standing there screaming, make them count the votes, make them count the votes, while John Kerry was preparing to go off and have Christmas dinner in Sun Valley, Idaho with Arnold.
Yes, and there are people right here, Dr. Bob Fatrakis, you can go.
Oh, I know Bob Fatrakis.
Oh, you do? Wonderful. Well, he was trying to get, if he was here, Jesse Jackson was here, waiting for the call from Kerry, because they had all the evidence, and Kerry would not go along with
and
it.
Was sitting on 40-some million dollars in his campaign war chest.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes. Well, Juanita, it is awfully good to hear from you. Unfortunately, we are at show's end, but I'm glad you waited, and I really appreciate it.
All right, Bob.
And you have a lovely weekend, and I hope we'll hear from you soon.
All right.
All right. Bye. You take care. Bye now. Yeah, that's Juanita calling from Ohio. Love hearing from her. Yeah, Ohio was a nightmare. And nobody except people who listen to, you know, Hannity and O'Reilly think otherwise. It was stolen. And then, of course, the guy who stole it, who was a private pilot of considerable hours and real expertise, forgot to put gas in his tank flying from Columbus to Washington, D.C. Just one of those I'll be damned kind of moments. It forgot the gasoline. Missed it by that much. A real special thanks. Something happened during our conversation there. We've met Robert in Australia's $150 challenge. Two people. And it was just mind-blowing. So thank you. Thank you very much. To the individual who just made a huge contribution that met the challenge. If it's okay to use your name on air, let me know. I'll never use a last name or anything, but I like to at least note people, you know, just by first name when they help us do something like staying on the air. Thank you. Thank you very much. Don and Maureen in Arizona stand. Writing in, listening to your discussion, the highest point in South Florida, Don and Maureen write in, listening to your discussion about global warming and rising sea levels, I don't know if the website, but I saw a website several years ago which covered approximately the same time frame, and it showed water levels as high as a third floor window in New York City, Florida was gone, and the Pacific Ocean bordered on western Arizona, Utah, and a little slip of Idaho. Anyway, regarding the high point in South Florida, I had a long chat with a highly regarded historian of South Florida who said the highest point in South Florida was 12 feet above sea level, so the rich really don't have a place to run to in Little Havana, LOL. Thanks for your help. Love the show. Don and Maureen in Phoenix, Arizona stand. And that's the whole point. Not to get all biblical or anything. People, we know the ones who will, as the Bible says, be the first to cry, Lord, Lord. And in the biblical reference, they get pretty short shrift. But they will run over, kick, stab, rob, beat, murder, drown, incinerate, whomever they have to, if the dark day comes. You see it every time. You see it every time a hurricane hits. It's brutal. And the thing is, it does not. The sea level rise is not something that is merely a natural occurrence. It is happening because we, as a species, are causing it to happen. but there are apparently enough people in denial of that who are paid very well to deny it. I guess you wouldn't say to fiddle while Rome burns, but rather to, I don't know, play the cello while the water laps around their thighs. Robert just wrote in from Australia, hurrah! Big thanks to whoever met the challenge. Well, thank you, Robert, for making it. And thanks, everybody, for putting up with a very weird week. It wasn't supposed to be weird from a be-here status, but it certainly turned out to be weird from a hardware status. As I noted, we have a PRISM West Virginia chat tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific. You've gotten a little taste of Dr. Bill. Over this week. And the extended chats that he has with Professor Keith Lilly are absolutely unparalleled. And there's interactivity too. You can participate by email or by chat. Easiest way to get it is by going to prismwv.org. prismwv.org. You can get the link to the video there, or you can get the and you can join in the chat stream. You can also listen on the regular horn stream, as it will be broadcast live. So I hope you will join in. This is so important. Now, there is always some talk at the beginning about the nuts and bolts of the actual coursework. But Keith and Dr. Bill get into the meat and potatoes of it pretty quick. So, check it out and see if you aren't simply amazed. 3 p.m. Eastern, noon, Pacific, 2 hours, the prismwv.org website and on the horn stream. So it's time to get out of here. And I should have noted, thank you, Till, because not just Robert's challenge was met, but it was met in excess. So that means, yes, there are... We are caught up very near to even. We are right at even for where we need to be. And we can go into the last half of March feeling pretty decent about April. Thank you. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. You with your kind contributions through the years and through the months. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to Gene and Susan, our news ninjas. Thanks to Agnes for help with the posts. Thanks to John Fox, who is working with me to get some of this stuff squared away, technically wise. Thanks to Ben Birch, who's been helping with some of the gremlin weirdness. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acact.org. And always, always, always. Gina, Judy, it's all for you.